with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Kincaid, egomaniac, and I'm back live. It's Friday on the front porch. Hey, Bob, why are you calling yourself an egomaniac, he said, talking to himself as though he had a diseased mind. Who knows, I may. No, I just thought you'd like to know that we got another one of those emails while I was gone. Subject line, egomaniac? Question? Can't you find someone to stand in your place when you're away or sick? The world will not stop spinning. No. No, the answer is no. No. I don't know. Maybe I could give Don Blankenship a call and he could fill in for a little bit. How would that be? Maybe I should get Cletus... or use this to fill in. I mean, you know, they're just down the road. No. No, sorry. When I'm gone, I'm gone. You know, I can't get to, you know, none of the big boys you like to listen to do the fill-in work. And it's not something I could get Brad to, you know, Brad is Malloy's go-to guy for fill-ins. But, see, everything is here in this studio. So you can't just sit down and do what I do here from, you know, Albuquerque. Right? Right. So there you have it. But I'm back, and this really is live. And I'm tickled pink to be back. You know, I don't like being gone, but it was a necessary... It was necessary. I can't just sit here and talk to you about the necessity of ending mountaintop removal without I take some part in participating in that effort, and that was what this was all about. For 3 days, I saw lovely Prestonsburg, Kentucky. And it is. It's a lovely little town surrounded by mountaintop removal. It's denuded hills. Well, they're not even denuded hills. They're just not hills anymore now, are they? But it's the same. You know, driving home last night, I came through eastern Kentucky and the very southwestern part of Virginia. And I mean, it's right. The mountaintop removal's right down to the ground there. And I kept thinking, and I don't know about where you were, but we had unseasonably warm weather both yesterday and the day before, and the day before that felt more like, oh, I don't know, late September, early October. And so as I'm driving these winding little two-lane roads and praying to God that some overloaded coal truck doesn't just wipe me out, I'm thinking, man, it's awful foggy around here. Kind of hazy. But after a little while, I realized, wait a minute, Bob, where the hell do you think you are? You're in the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone. That ain't fog. That's not haze. That's not mist. That was the detritus of millions upon millions of pounds of high explosives, the same kind that Timothy McVeigh used to take down the Murrah Federal Building, just occluding the landscape. There, for everybody to breathe. That's when I turned on the recirculate button in the vehicle's ventilation system, hoping that somehow a little bit of it would be filtered away and maybe I wouldn't breathe it. You know, my lungs don't need any help being assaulted. But you get the idea. But just to give you an idea, just to expand upon that idea, consider this. A woman who smokes, who lives in a non-mountaintop removal county. A county, now she smokes, and she smokes like a normal, regular smoker smokes. Okay? But she does not live in a mountaintop removal county. Now take a woman who lives as upright and clean life as possible, doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, gets regular exercise, really cares, and they're both pregnant. And they both really care about their baby. Well, the woman who doesn't smoke and exercises regularly and eats a good diet and really cares about her baby's health, but happens to live in a county where mountaintop removal takes place, that woman has a 180% higher chance of giving birth to a birth-defected baby than does the woman who smokes, who doesn't live in a mountaintop removal community. Does that give you an idea? That is the scope of the Appalachian apocalypse. That is the scope of the agony of Appalachia. Our children in the womb aren't even safe. Even they aren't safe from the grasping, clawing clutches of the coal industry and its relentless, remorseless drive to place even unborn babies on the altar of its unholy profit. So imagine my surprise when I saw a study, or a story, not a study, when I saw a story out of the Washington Post from this past Thursday. It broke as a press release today. And of course, by the way, it's Friday on the front porch, so everything's pretty much fair game. The Washington Post, of course, you're going to hear bias. But this is what it says. The American Federation of Teachers, vilified by critics as an obstacle to school reform. What critics? Come on, name some names, Washington Post. Who are the critics? Well, but you'll... Right-wingers, teabaggers, Repiglicans, you know, the usual suspects. Vilified by critics as an obstacle to school reform, is leading an unusual effort to turn around a floundering school system in a place where deprivation is layered on heartache. Oh, we are getting a little artistic with our language there, aren't we, Lindsay Layton of the Washington Post? Next paragraph. It was a dark and stormy night. No. That's not the next paragraph. The AFT, which typically represents teachers in urban settings, wants to improve education deep in the heart of Appalachia by simultaneously tackling the social and economic troubles of McDowell County. Or as we say around here, McDowell County. The union has gathered about 40 partners, including Blue Cross Blue Shield, Cisco Systems, IBM, Save the Children, foundations, utility companies, housing specialists, community colleges, and state and federal governments, which have committed to a 5-year plan to try to lift McDowell out of its depths. Well, a 5-year plan. The McDowell Initiative. The McDowell Initiative, which is how they'll say it in hallowed places like Washington, D.C., the McDowell Initiative, to be announced on Friday. That would be today. comes in the middle of a national debate about what causes failing schools in impoverished counties, the educators, or the environment. Oh, this is promising. Reformers such as former D.C. Schools Chancellor Michelle A. Rhee argue that for too long, weak teachers have used poverty as an excuse and that an effective educator can transcend circumstances. Unions such as the AFT maintain that economic and social factors must be addressed for a child to succeed. I've gotten so angry in the last couple of years when people who are new to our field decide that they alone, just by exhorting, will help ensure that geography does not become destiny for some kids, said Randy Weingarten, president of the AFT, the nation's second largest teachers union. It represents educators in the district, New York City, and elsewhere, including McDowell. A lot of the factors that confront kids, poverty, divorce, health care, are real obstacles. People can pretend to ignore them elsewhere, but no one can ignore those factors in McDowell. And it goes on, I told you about the haze. I told you about the smoke and the, The children who file into Anawalt Elementary School here each morning carry burdens that hang over them like the haze from the nearby coal mines. And by coal mines, the Washington Post, since they're talking about a haze, what they actually mean is the nearby mountaintop removal sacrifice zones that are actively poisoning the children as they walk into the school. But that is far too complicated a bit of language for the Washington Post and Lindsay Layton. Texas Betsy reminding me, I know anecdotes are not research. Oh, but sometimes they are. But didn't we have a phone call and a blog post a few weeks back about how Cassie's education improved once she started eating? Yes. Yes, we did. Well, they're going to try to make sure that the children eat in McDowell County. I'm sure there are right-wingers who will be horrified at the thought. I'm trying to remember what Flush Flimball wants children to dumpster dive. Most of the youngsters who attend Anawalt Elementary School, most of the youngsters live with grown-ups who do not hold jobs, casualties of Cole's collapse. Bull. They are casualties of Cole's ongoing predation of McDowell County, West Virginia, because it has not collapsed, just the jobs that go with it. The production is still there. They're still blasting away, hammer and tongs, hand over fist, okay? Coal didn't collapse. The jobs collapse because mountaintop removal takes away jobs. All right? Many are being raised by grandparents because their mothers and fathers are in prison or struggling with addiction. Now why would you have an addiction problem in an area being rapidly depopulated by the coal industry so it can more easily and with less witnesses go about the business of destroying that little corner of the planet without anyone watching? Yeah, you're getting the idea. Of course you are. 8 of every 10 children in the school meet the state's definition of poor. Some rarely see a doctor. The school building was constructed in 1924. It has a failing roof, steps that tremble under the weight of an adult, an unheated gymnasium, and antiquated electrical wiring that can't power air conditioning. This in a county where literally billions and billions and billions of dollars have rolled out on trains and on trucks in the form of coal extracted from under the hills and from the massive, terrifying, disgusting mountaintop removal projects. But the school was built in 1924 and the roof is failing. There are no after-school activities because if the children miss the school bus, they have no way to reach their modest houses and trailers. Love the way the Washington Post writes. Which are tucked into mountain crevices. Really? Mountain crevices? You mean like in Antarctica where you've got to poke with your little ski pole to make sure that there's the... Hello! Yeah, little Susie lives 500 feet down a mountain crevice in Appalachia. There are no recreation centers, no YMCAs. Leaving the county is so unusual, that on a school trip to the Dollywood Amusement Park in Tennessee last year, several children mistook a highway rest stop with its glass doors and bright lights for their destination. Oh, good. We get a little local color of the ignorant shoeless hillbillies in the middle of this piece of elitist, snotty, 1% media Washington Post reportage. The state, which took over the McDowell Public Schools nearly a decade ago, has failed to make much of a dent in the county's abysmal test scores and a dropout rate more than three times the national average. Gail Manchin is the wife of Senator Joe Manchin. She said,
"I can't tell you how appalled and embarrassed that made me. Those children weren't any better off."
Manchin, thinking a more ambitious effort was needed, turned to Weingarten for help.
"I knew if we were going to do this, we had to do it the right way," Weingarten said. "That's why we wanted a lot of partners, and the people in McDowell had to want us to be involved, and that we were going to have to deal with all the issues, education, social, economic."
Oh, wait just a minute, because in that little list of three things, education, social, and economic, we're missing another factor. And it's called environmental, Randy Weingarten. It's called environmental. Because it's mighty damned hard to learn while the children are breathing poison. Right? Yeah. Mighty damned hard. It's hard to learn when, if you have running water, it probably runs as red as tomato soup and smells like rotten eggs and has more poison in it than a Nazi death camp. It's a little hard to learn that way. And this continues on. It's unclear exactly what the McDowell Initiative will entail or cost. The union has committed $100,000 in staff time for planning the project over the next 6 months. It is likely to include improvements that directly affect schools, such as expanded broadband so that digital learning can become a regular component of classroom instruction, better teacher training, and a fine-tuned instructional program. Investments would also be geared to help families outside the classroom, such as better access to health care, drug prevention and treatment programs, better transportation, and more recreation. Still don't see anything in there about ending the actual root cause of what is bringing this on. Mountaintop removal. What are you going to do when the floods come back in the spring? Randy Weingarten, what are you going to do? Because I don't think having broadband is going to help much when a wall of water 10 or 15 feet high roars down the holler off of the mountaintop removal sites. And the end of the story is a human interest story about little 9-year-old Paige Blankenship. Don't hold the last name against her. She likes attending her school, Bradshaw Elementary, in the western part of the county. She lives in a trailer with her mother, aunt, and grandmother. Her father isn't much of a presence in her life. He lives in another town and was supposed to visit Paige on Sunday. She waited all day, phone in hand, but he never showed. Paige shares a bedroom with her mother, Sherry, who quit her job as a butcher to care for her mother, Tondale, who has respiratory troubles. Oh, gee, I wonder why Granny has respiratory troubles. Paige's aunt Georgia, 44 years old, is a former emergency medical technician who suffered a heart attack recently and stopped working. Really? A heart attack? In the middle of mountaintop removal country? Aren't there some peer-reviewed scientific journal studies about that? Why, yes! Yes, there are! When you live in a mountaintop removal county, you're more likely to have heart troubles. You're more likely to have pulmonary problems. You're more likely to have a dying endocrine system. Your guts are more likely not to work right. And yes, you're more likely to get cancer and die.
Oh, Bob, why do you have to politicize these things? I'm not. I am not politicizing this. But there's got to be a little reality spoken somewhere, okay? Now, I just read to you, not that you can't, but I hate reading to you, at least in extended clips, but I wanted you to hear the content and the tenor and the tone of the article. Okay? Did you hear anything in there? I mean, like I said, they were referred to as coal mines. Wonder why they'd say coal mines instead of mountaintop removal operations. Well, mountaintop removal operations just sound nasty now, don't they? It's only because they are. So we'll just call them coal mines. Now, why would we want to just call them coal mines in a story by the Washington Post about a project by the American Federation of Teachers? Oh, wait. Shall we analyze? Do let's. Now, I want to say this with a caveat in front of it. If you have spent any time listening to this program, and the nature of the Horn family is such that we get new listeners, but what we have for the most part is a dedicated group of people who have listened for a long time. If you listen to this program, you know that there is no more of a pro-labor, except perhaps Rick Smith. I will give Rick Smith this. Rick is more pro-labor than I am. And that's because it's a matter of walking the walk and talking the talk. And Rick is a union man par excellence and first rate. I have a degree of admiration for Rick Smith that is almost unexpressible. But I myself am pretty darn pro-labor. Very pro-labor. I can't imagine a work situation in this country that is not made better when people are able to be members of a collective bargaining unit that is able to speak with one voice for its membership and thereby create an equal level playing field between management and the people who make all the money for management, namely the workers. So are we clear on that? I hope so. Because otherwise this might get just a little bit troubling. And I don't want people to think that I'm anti-anything. But let's start in point A, and let's run the string out to point B. And once we get to point B, let's wrap it around the post and run out to point C. This is a project of the American Federation of Teachers. Unlike the various state-to-state so-and-so education association groups, the American Federation of Teachers is a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding union. And I have a tremendous degree of respect for the American Federation of Teachers. The American Federation of Teachers, unlike the various Education Association. Unlike them, the American Federation of Teachers is actually a member of the AFL-CIO, the American Federation of Labor, Congress of Industrial Organizations. Here's where the problem comes. Also a member of the AFL-CIO is the United Mine Workers. Now, I have no problem whatsoever in saying that the United Mine Workers are dead to me. And I say this even though my father, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather, and especially my grandfather and great-grandfather, actively worked to bring the UMWA to life in West Virginia. It was, at that point in time, a heroic labor organization, and its history is one of the kind of heroism that gives you goosebumps and makes the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck and makes you thrill with a little tingle of pride all up and down your body when you think about what they went through and what they sacrificed to make a better future. That having been said, the United Mine Workers of America, as it exists today, is a dead thing as far as I'm concerned. They just recently sat down to the table with Alpha Natural Resources, and they'd been working on the same old contract for a long, long time, and Alpha Natural Resources, just out of the clear blue and out of the goodness of its heart, mind you, re-upped all of their contracts for their prep plants, their coal prep plants, which and every last union member, and there are unions within Alpha Natural Resources, re-upped and gave a raise and did lots of nice, nice things for the UMWA. And Cecil Roberts, the president of the UMWA, came out just a crowing and a hooting and a hollering and singing the praises of Alpha Natural Resources. Alpha, you might remember, is the coal company that recently agreed to pay $210 million in fines to the federal government, with the caveat that only $45 million of that would be used to compensate the families of the 29 people who were literally incinerated into unrecognizable, minuscule, molecular components of themselves at the Upper Big Branch mine. Because Massey, of course, put profits before people. And, of course, the United Mine Workers, even though mountaintop removal has done more than any environmentalist anywhere, anytime, to eliminate coal mining jobs, the United Mine Workers of America can't quite bring itself to condemn mountaintop removal and call for the underground mining of coal, even though that would likely add members to their roster. They can't do it, because Cecil Roberts is a frightened man. He got his ass handed to him by Don Blankenship, and he remembers the beating to this day. So with that in mind, let's consider the McDowell Initiative. The UMWA, like the AFT, are both members of the U.S. AFL-CIO. The current president of the AFL-CIO is a man by the name of Richard Trumka. Richard Trumka was president of the UMWA before Cecil Roberts became its president. There will never be an anti-coal, anti-mountaintop removal word emanate from anywhere within the building of the or the body of the AFL-CIO as long as Richard Trumka is continuing to breathe out and breathe in again immediately thereafter. So in other words, the McDowell Initiative is doomed to failure. Because you cannot take someone who is dying of thirst and expect to help them by offering them a bag of potato chips. Put more plainly, you can't take someone who's dehydrated and expect to heal them by giving them a box of salt. And that is exactly what's going on here. The number one, the absolute root cause of the despair, the addiction, the poverty, the heartbreak that afflicts not just McDowell County, but Mingo and Logan and Wyoming and Boone and Raleigh. The absolute root cause of it the direct and proximate cause of it, if you like that kind of language, is mountaintop removal. And so they're going to, all these corporations, IBM and Blue Cross Blue Shield and Cisco Systems, and all these foundations, and all these partners, are going to go in, and they're going to go in the barn, and they're going to make sure there's plenty of hay and fresh water for the horses, and they're going to do everything to make a perfect barn while the barn is on fire. You see what I'm talking about, I trust. This is unavoidable. But there is no way that the American Federation of Teachers could have said, okay, listen, the first thing we're going to have to deal with is mountaintop removal. Because then Gail Manchin, who is said to have been the genesis of this, well, Gail Manchin's not going to say anything about mountaintop removal because her husband is Blanche Manchin, who thinks it's better when more of West Virginia blows up. It's better when more children are breathing more of that vile, toxic, and terminal crap. Because little dead hillbillies mean profits. And when there's less hillbillies to complain, well, that just means that they can blow the mountains up with less people complaining. This is pathetic. But it's par for the course in a country in which a TV network... You remember Monday's show? The one where we played the audio from the Discovery Channel piece about who Alpha Natural Resources running right? Remember that? That's going to really, honest to goodness, no kidding, air on TV next week. Lots of people are going to get to see it. You heard it here first. You know, the part about how coal can be part of our green, sustainable, renewable future. With all the cool West Coast jazz licks in there amongst it all. Ah, nothing to see here. Move along. These are not the toxic heavy metals you're looking for. But, oh, it certainly sounds impressive, doesn't it? The opening quote from their press release from AFT President Randy Weingarten says, McDowell County is an American story that deserves a new chapter. Given the challenges, being conventional won't be good enough here. We will be flexible, creative, and entrepreneurial, and we'll take risks. Well, I know one risk you won't take, Randy Weingarten, and that is to say that coal kills. That mountaintop removal kills. That every woman of childbearing age in McDowell County has enough bioaccumulated mercury in her system to account for a 10-point IQ deficit in every child she bears. You won't take that risk, Randy Weingarten. I'm pretty daggum sure. Because if you did, Richard Trumka would come down on you like a piano landing on Yosemite Sam. You'd be standing there holding an anvil in midair like Wile E. Coyote with that mother look on your face. Help. Because in West Virginia, coal is not king. Coal is God. Almighty
unchanging, unchangeable, inassailable, unreachable God.
Why, they have more than 40 partners to enhance educational opportunity for children in the McDowell County Public Schools. And they're going to address underlying problems caused by severe and chronic poverty and economic decline. Huh. Still no environmental degradation, environmental... Come on! Terrorism! Just remember, if a guy with a turban was doing what Kevin Crutchfield and Alpha Natural Resources and the other thugs from the coal industry are doing to places like McDowell County, we would be bombing the snot out of some Middle Eastern country over it. Remember, the Iraq War, supposedly, ended yesterday. Well, we do more, probably in a month, in terms of high explosives detonated in central Appalachia than were used in the entirety of the Iraq War and Afghanistan combined. And that is the God's honest and unfly-blown truth. Oh, looky! Oh, God, I just want to vomit! I've got the list here of the partners for education in McDowell County. As of December 15th, 2011, the partners are American Federation of Teachers, West Virginia Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. What? Oh, there's a study out every day says something makes you sick. Huh? Birth defects? I just don't believe it. That's our Earl Ray. Gail Manchin, Vice President of West Virginia Board of Education and former West Virginia First Lady. Here's some more partners. AFT West Virginia, the Alliance for Excellent Education. Alpha Natural Resources. Well, goddamn, let me just scroll down here and let me see if I can find Crack Dealers for America. It's the same thing. The Benedum Foundation. Blue Cross Blue Shield of West Virginia, Building America Community Development Enterprise, Cisco Systems, College Board, Donors Choose, First Book, Frontier Communications, Global Aurea, Grace Bible Church, Hope Community Development Corp., Marshall University's June Harless Center for Rural Educational Research and Development. That's probably Buck Harless's wife. He's a coal thug, too. McDowell County Board of Education, McDowell County Commission. Ray Hall Appalachian Transportation Institute, Save the Children, U.S. Program, Silver Lining, Southern West Virginia Community and Technical College. Oh, looky, the United Mine Workers of America, U.S. Representative Nick Ray Hall, U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, U.S. Senator Jay Rockefeller, the West Virginia AFL-CIO, actually, whom I have a great deal of respect for many of, as long as they're not part of the UMWA. West Virginia Delegate Cliff Moore, West Virginia Delegate Mary Poling, West Virginia Education Association, West Virginia PTA, West Virginia School Boards Association, West Virginia School Service Personnel Association, West Virginia Senator H. Truman Chafin, West Virginia Senator John Pat Fanning, West Virginia Senator Robert Plymail, West Virginia State Police, and the Worldwide Workshop Foundation. But you know what? It don't matter if that thing is a million names long as Alpha Natural Resources remains on that list, then you know that it is going to come to naught, and that it is that from its outset it is bathed and baptized in blood. Now, don't think this is cynicism on my part, because it's not. I can't think of a place on the planet that needs help more than McDowell County, West Virginia. But you cannot help McDowell County, West Virginia, as long as the likes of Alpha Natural Resources are setting off blasts that are measured by the ton. And tons and tons.
Every day. Every day in West Virginia, something on the order of 4 million pounds of ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosives are detonated every day, 6 days a week. We get a break on Sunday so we can go to church. But the prayers for the blasting and the poisoning and the killing to stop have not yet been heard by a God who is apparently too busy watching football and making sure little Timmy Tebow makes a touchdown to pay attention to 9-year-old hillbilly children. God Almighty. So we'll have some press conferences, and people will talk in very concerned tones about what McDowell County needs. And we'll talk about the children. And the folks will probably get on the radio and say, Alpha Base, this is Alpha Base. Come in, Blasting Central. Gotcha, Alpha Base. This is Blasting Central. Got us a press conference going on here. Got a bunch of outsiders from CBS and ABC and NBC and CNN and everything for the press conference down here. Roger that, Alpha Base. Alpha Blasting Central. Want to make sure that we don't have any really great big monumental explosions go off during the press conference to, distract the attentions of the easily distracted and not terribly intelligent for-profit 1% media we got here. We wouldn't want them actually asking questions about how much impact us poisoning everything in sight, poisoning the air, poisoning the water, poisoning the land, poisoning the bodies, poisoning the babies in the womb has to do with the fact that little Susie can't learn in McDowell County, West Virginia. Roger that, Alpha Base. All quiet up here. Good, Blasting Central. We'll advise when they're gone, and we'll go back to business as usual. Got it, Alpha Base. Business as usual. Man, oh man. I should be numb to this kind of stuff by now. Because every so often, somebody gets an urge to come and help the hillbillies. Very few of them understand what that means. Robert F. Kennedy understood. He came here and saw the strip mining and knew immediately what was going on. You know what he got for his troubles. Judy Bonds understood. Come January, it'll be a year she's gone. Bo Webb knows. Maria Gonneau knows. Vernon Haltom knows. Junior Walk knows. Debbie Gerald knows. Ed Wiley knows. Net Nelson knows. Paul Nelson knows. But every last one of those names I just rattled off, well, let's just say that the Joe Manchins and Nick Rahals and John Rockefellers and Earl Ray Tomblins and Cecil Robertses and Richard Trumkas and so forth They're not interested. They're not interested. Because everyone's name I just rattled off is actively engaged in truth-telling. And frankly, the truth is almost invisible to the naked eye in Appalachia when compared to the vastness of the coal industry's altar dedicated to unholy profit. And that's fact. It's about 13 minutes before the hour. It's Friday on the front porch. We've got a lot of stuff outside Appalachia yet to go into. And, of course, whatever you want to put on the... whatever you want to put on the table is welcome as well. You know the number, of course. Direct dial is 304-658-3333. Toll free, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. I'm taking to mentioning the toll free second. Because if you don't need us to pay the freight, well, no, we'd rather not. But if you've got to have the toll-free number, use it. If that's the only way you can get through, use it, okay? Because that is what it's there for. It's just, well, we are operating on an ever-thinning shoestring. But I do want to make sure that I thank those of you who, in the last several days, have contributed, who made our buddy John's challenge a rousing success on Monday. And who have, you know, we're halfway through December, and we're only about $350 away from the actual halfway mark of our fundraising for the month. So that's a pretty good thing. We weren't there last month or the month before. So hopefully that will remedy. If you want to help out and keep Conversation Radio, independent media, non-1%, non-for-profit media going. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. The tab it's under the tab Contribute. And there's also a snail mail address. So if you will go to headonradionetwork.com and click on Contribute, and you prefer not to do PayPal, the snail mail address is there as well. Thanks to everybody who does keep all of this going. And gosh, I'm glad to be home. The road gets a little... tiresome sometimes, but we'll come back with your calls, your thoughts, your emails, bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The old man turned off the radio, said, "Where did all of the old songs go? Kids sure play funny music these days. They play it in the strangest ways. They said it looks to me like they've all gone wild. It was peaceful back when I was a child. Well, man, could it be that the girls and boys are trying to be heard above your noise? And the lonely voice of you cries, what is truth?" A little boy of 3 sitting on the floor looks up and says, "Daddy, what is war?" "Son, that's when people fight and die." A little boy of 3 says, "Daddy, why?" Young man of 17 in Sunday school, being taught the golden rule. And by the time another year's gone around, it may be his turn to lay his life down. Can you blame the voice of you for asking, what is truth? Young man man sitting on the witness stand. The man with the book says, raise your hand. Repeat after me, I solemnly swear. The man looked down at his long hair. And although the young man solemnly swore, nobody seemed to hear anymore. And it didn't really matter if the truth was there. It was the cut of his clothes and the length of his hair. And the lonely voice of youth cries, what is truth? The young girl dancing to the latest beat has found new ways to move her feet. The young man speaking in the city square is trying to tell somebody that he cares. Yeah, the ones that you're calling wild are gonna be the leaders in a little while. This old world's waking to a newborn day, and I solemnly swear that it'll be their way. You better help that voice of you find what is true. And the lonely voice of you cries, what is truth?
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
And by the way, a program note, just because it's so nice to hear and be able to say, next week, since this is Friday, God knows in my mind, I'm not sure exactly what day it is, but this is Friday, so that means 2 days of silence. But next week appears, well, it should just be normal to the extent we're capable of doing anything normally around here. Five days of unrepentant, unmitigated conversation radio, starting on Monday and ending on Friday. It's the week before Christmas. Christmas falls on a Sunday, which is kind of nice. And on the 23rd, Friday, we will continue with a tradition that's been going on, well, for quite a while now, as long as I've been doing the radio gig this time through. And we will have the reading from the New Testament of the Christmas story as read by, well, our three kids, Margie and Ferg and Doodle. So I'm looking forward to that. There's actually an archive, and you can kind of hear them growing up year by year by year. Email came in from Tamara in San Diego. She said, "And the American Federation of Teachers is dead to me. As I think you know, I paid union dues for 10 long years, only to realize that they didn't actually represent me." She references an article Tamara does from The Nation, in which Will Dershowitz says the majority of today's professors are academic lettuce pickers. Tamara says, "It was a hard lesson to learn, but I found that adjuncts, part-timers, and non-tenured professors are not actually part of the guild. The only language in our bargaining agreement that addressed us was the part that said that we could be terminated without cause at any time." Whew. Heartbreaking to hear. Thank you, Tamara. And Clayton noting, by the way, Mountain Crevice? He said, "Where I come from, we called that a holler." But see, they can't use holler in the 1% for-profit media, Clayton, because they don't know whether to spell it H-O-L-L-E-R, which is how we pronounce it, which is, that is what it is. Or get out the New York Times style manual and refer to it as a hollow, H-O-L-L-O-W. So they'll call it a mountain crevice. You know, people outside Appalachia try to talk about Appalachian folks, and it just kind of goes all to hell in a hurry, doesn't it? You got Diane. It was Diane Sawyer who came here and explained bad teeth in Appalachia by chalking it up to Mountain Dew mouth, because the babies are given Mountain Dew in their bottles when they're just in the crib. Never mind the fact that when they were in the womb, they were ingesting poisons and toxins, and the water that comes from their taps is sufficient to dissolve their teeth in their head. Let's blame it on Mountain Dew mouth. But before I get too grimmed up, do let me remind you, or let me tell you, I know what I'm going to be doing with my weekend. Thanks to our buddy Lee. I have a game to play on Sunday. It's called Tim Tebow Bingo. And this comes via the folks at Athlon Sports. "Watching Tim Tebow is becoming a very enjoyable pastime on Sundays. His erratic play and unpolished style make for the TV that you can't take your eyes away from. Much like a car accident, you're just waiting for Tebow to toss a pick six or scramble around in the pocket while he gets sacked. So to make this TV even more fun to watch, here's a Tim Tebow bingo game you can play the next time you see Tebow take the field for the Broncos. Tim Tebow Bingo features things like squares such as Tim Tebow tosses wobbly pass, Tim Tebow runs around in the backfield, Tim Tebow fails to read defense, Tebow scrambles, throws it away, Tebow runs for 5 yards, Tebow completes successful hike of ball, Tebow looks up from dirt to see incompletion, Tebow throws to wrong team, Tebow uses poor mechanics, Tebow on phone after interception, Tebow vows to get better, Tebow prays, Brady Quinn warms up for no reason, Tebow underthrows wide receiver, Tebow gets raptured, Tebow stares at plays on wrist, Tebow gets sacked, Tebow throws garbage time TD, Tebow overthrows wide receiver, announcer mentions Eric Crouch, Tebow hurries up and off the field, Tebow completes successful handoff, John Fox audibly sighs into headset, Tebow is benched for being bad at quarterback." Now, see, I would have replaced, and then there's a picture of little Timmy Tebow in the middle of the board. I would have included one, Tim Tebow caught snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt. But that's probably just a little too over the top. So I'm printing out my Tim Tebow bingo card. And you can find yours over at athlonsports.com. Well, enough shilly-shallying about. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, and welcome back, Mr. Bob Kincaid.
Well, thank you, David, from Maine, very kindly.
And I'm sure you had a wonderful time in Kentucky eating lots of great food.
No, food wasn't so much, but it was a trip.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. Did you at all catch the Anthony Bourdain holiday special?
I did indeed.
Pretty creative.
Oh, the Samantha Brown part laid me low.
That was clever. She should get an Emmy for that one.
The only thing I would have done is I would have written the script a little bit when she said, "I want you to meet my friend. I call her Paula."
Yeah.
It would have been, "Say hello to my little friend Paula."
Yeah, that would have been funny too. I especially got a kick out of the black vegan metal holiday special.
Yeah, I'm sure there was lots of hate mail over that.
I really want to know. I didn't look at the credits. Maybe I should have. I want to know who had a hand in writing that, because that was very creative how they put the narrative to it and they went to the different places, and it's a good episode for those people who haven't seen it.
Oh, absolutely. And what was the Miami layover episode was pretty good too.
I didn't see that one. I gotta check that out.
That's what came before. That was at 9 p.m. before the 10 p.m. Holiday special.
Mm. I'll have to check that out. I do have a recommendation. I just got done, and I've been telling you about this movie ever since it got announced. The Cave of Forgotten Dreams. Bob, you got to run, not walk, to watch this film. This is the Werner Herzog documentary on the Chaumet Cave of the cave paintings.
Oh wow! Tell us all how to find it.
You go on Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. You can just hit the play button and it'll start to play. It's really, really an eye opener on how how France takes care. I mean, it's amazing how they've taken care of this cave and the special strict instructions for people entering this cave. You get to see so much in such a short amount of time, in 90 minutes, and it really has a nice, I don't want to spoil it for you, but it has a nice surreal twist at the end that you just don't see coming. It's really crazy. And when you watch it, Bob, you'll just start thinking, like, that's insane. But the place that Werner Herzog takes it, here's the thing about it. This is crazy to me. The shots that he took on the aerial shots, he did with a remote control helicopter.
Oh, I love that stuff.
I thought, oh my God, I can't believe, because I was tricked. I thought, wow, this helicopter pilot's awesome. Look how close he's getting to the area here. And, the great thing about it is it's kind of like, he opens it up with kind of like a disembodied type floating. So you see the road before you enter the cave, and it's like you're traveling. And it's just amazing to watch. There's so many great quotes from it. I don't care what anyone says. It is a family film. You have to have your family watch it if you are listening. If this is your first time watching a Werner Herzog film or documentary, this is the perfect one to pick.
It's happening this weekend.
I can't say enough about it, and I knew it was going to be great from the moment I saw the trailer. And there's just so many. What we'll have to do, Bob, is when you watch it, I'll have to call in and tell you, and we'll have to touch base on what you like about it and what I like about it.
Because I can tell you already, one of the things I'll like about it is that it will have a broad spectrum appeal here in this house with my family, because everybody will sit and go, wow. Because I hate to say that something is family-oriented, because
that usually
means, you know, that's the kiss of death.
right.
Agnes will be sitting there on the couch going, shut up, what? I want to see that, what? Because everybody else will be going, huh? Wow, oh, that's cool.
I'll tell you one amazing thing about it, about the cave paintings, in case people are not up on and have seen any trailers or anything. Some of the illustrations that they actually have, they actually depict movement. So you see eight legs moving instead of four.
Yeah, and, you know, for the longest time, the researchers, why do they, is this a representation of fantasy in the art? No, it's movement. It's just like in the cartoons.
And you want to hear something really stunning, Bob. This was pretty amazing to me. There's actually a calcite foot and a hand, 7-year-old boy and a wolf together.
Oh, neat.
It's crazy when you see it. I mean, this is part of the thing where I have to say that there was an architect for the I have to say there has to be like a celestial architect for a place like this to be preserved like this. And when you see the lighting of the shadows, I know Werner Herzog was a really adamant about getting more film crew in. And I think the fact that the lighting and the dancing on the shadows, and the fact that he goes into the fact of shadows dancing on the caves, and how that reflected when they were painting, and they go into this is a crazy thing. They actually notice one of the artists because he has a crooked finger, so you can see his handiwork throughout different portions of the cave.
And see, you just said something, and I bet you I'll get email.
Yeah.
You said his finger.
Yeah.
How do we know it wasn't hers?
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
I love all the places that stories like this have the potential to take us. Where we can go, we can think, and you know, we go tromping off into a cave with a little battery powered light on our helmet, and even then it can be scary and dangerous.
Yeah.
Imagine doing it with a torch.
That's the other thing. They talk about that, and the crazy thing about it is one of the crazy scenes in it is they show the spatial points of the whole entire cave done through lasers. So you see that in the film. So you have that visual in your head. This is why Werner Herzog is a genius, people. You see that visual in your head as he goes around to different portions of the cave.
And the title again?
Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
And it's available for immediate viewing on Netflix.
Immediate viewing on Netflix. You know what? I'm kicking myself because this is a film I probably would have liked to see. They released it in 3D.
They did release it in 3D. Like,
yeah,
they did. Oh man.
And you know they're going to have to work on like an HD 3D TV. Maybe they can talk to the people and then.
Well, I mean, isn't that already out? Aren't they already doing that? Isn't that the big thing that they're hustling in between little snippets of programming and all the ads this holiday season?
Yeah, I think, how about this, an affordable version, not one for...
Well, that's that whole early adoption, market availability.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So this holiday season, to quote our new hero, Tim Minchin, this season, HD 3D TVs are what the dead Palestinian is being forced to press ganged into flogging. I love that line. A dead Palestinian press ganged into flogging PlayStations and beer. That's a line from that song I played, David, White Wine in the Sun.
Yeah,
by the way,
I like Tim Minchin too. I saw him on, he was on a Paul Provenza special called The Green Room, which for people who haven't checked out, I recommend. That's where a lot of comedians sit down and they just start talking after their show, and they talk about whatever. And it's like an uncensored look into it. And Paul Provenza, he's a genius. He was behind the Aristocrats film, and that's a good show too.
Yeah, if you're up for some, if you're ready for the language.
Yeah.
Who knew that Bob Saget could be that filthy?
Yeah. That film itself is. That's not a family film. Let's preface that.
Yes.
This is not family
entertainment.
But Cave of Forgotten Dreams is. And you know, one last thing about this, because I just think it's such a interesting, is, you know, he has such a great way of narration and delivery. And there's actually a line in the movie where he's talking about the cave, and can you imagine these amazing paintings? And then all of a sudden, you just hear him say, "Man," it's so out of place at that moment, but perfect for Warner.
Oh, I gotta see this. And in fact, David in Tennessee, one of your brothers in the fraternity of Davids.
Okay, good.
Has written in and said Terry Gross spent an hour with Werner Herzog, and it was transformative. He ties the history of art into a wonderful basket of stunning thought, totally relevant to any art today. It's a wow film.
Oh, without a doubt, and the ending will definitely resonate. No spoilers, but the end will resonate where you're living, Bob, and where we're all living at this moment.
And Robert, otherwise known as Phase 5 in the chat room, David, just wrote in and said, "Bob, I love these film reviews. I haven't heard of Cave of Forgotten Dreams. It hasn't been released locally in Australia, as far as I know, but I'm locating a copy as I type." So never underestimate the impact that you have with this stuff, Dave.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because, again, I think for Phase 5, I would suggest, the film that he did on Antarctica.
Yeah.
Any of those documentaries, the Grizzly Bear, any of Werner Herzog's documentaries, the guy, when he dies, he's going to be a Prophet Herzog.
Peace be upon him.
Peace be upon him. And you know, speaking of prophets, I had my differences with the man, but I still think he was one of the great journalist writers of our time.
Hitchens.
Hitchens, yeah.
Well, you know, I've said a million times, David, that if there is a God, and Hitchens was quite unequivocal in his position that there isn't one, and his position is one I think has considerable merit, but I've always said, if there is a God, it is a God of irony.
Mm.
And, you know, the thing that really put Christopher Hitchens at odds with the liberal progressive community, caused him to split ties with the nation, that sort of thing.
Right.
Was his full-throated, downright cheerleader-esque support of that filthy war that allegedly ended yesterday. George Bush's war against the people of Iraq, for which George Bush and Dick Cheney and the whole filthy, bloodthirsty crowd should all be standing in the dock at The Hague if there were any concept of justice extant in the world today. If there is a God, he is a God, or she, or it, is a God of irony, because Christopher Hitchens died basically at the same time that the war he so loved came to an end.
Yeah, I always thought when the issue of that, in the fact that Hitchens, he in his nature, he is a contrarian, and the fact that he was drinking so much at the time, and he was very volatile to so many people regarding certain issues, you know, Michael Moore and so forth. I always thought that Christopher Hitchens, that was one of the issues that he really wanted to set ablaze. Now, I don't know if he was changing his tune by the time of his, and he would ever admit that, hey, look, I don't think he's that type of guy when it comes to an issue like the war on terror.
Well, remember, he is thought to have created that phrase which has given so much fuel to the hate-filled fire of the right. He's the one who invented the word Islamofascism. And that's such a... I hate to go to this. It's such a bullshit word, David.
It is a bullshit word, and I've always, and it's such a canard, Bob, the fact that we constantly talk about quote unquote Muslim fundamentalists, and we can't even bring up the very fact of the murderous Christian fundamentalists all through the world.
Yeah.
It goes for all Western media when I say this. If the base is really, you know, the Christians have put such a fear in people.
And I love how the Christians were sitting around saying, well, you know, maybe he'll convert on his deathbed.
Did you see what Bill Bennett said?
No.
He said, well, I think Christopher Hitchens has a surprise waiting for him.
To which you can say to Bill Bennett, well, I think you don't have a surprise waiting for you.
You know, go dance in your underwear at some casinos and leave Hitchens memory alone.
Bingo Billy Bennett, Cheetos and one-armed bandits.
Yeah, there's another version of bingo you can play instead of T-Bone. Bingo Billy Bennett.
Yeah, and by the way, we had an email in from our buddy John in New York.
Yeah.
He said Christopher Hitchens was definitely one of those people I'm deeply conflicted about.
Yeah.
I found his essays about high culture, where he always managed to puff up his striped tie education and demean those of us who had to work for our schooling, utterly tedious and pretentious. As for his politics, though, I was never sure if he was, as his admirers said, so nuanced in his thinking that he didn't fit into right or left, or simply one of those bricolage types who borrowed ideas from both sides without any attempt at context or synthesis. But John qualifies it all by saying, but as an atheist bulldog and tireless critic of religious hypocrisy, he just couldn't be beat. I saw one tweet that said, if there is a God, I'm not sure who to be more sorry for, Hitch or him.
I mean, his essay on Mother Teresa was just spot on.
Oh, and the hell he caught for that.
His writing about, I can imagine why a lot of Catholics hated him, because he was just nailing the truth right out there. I mean, the very fact that we can't discuss issues like this is really, really, really troubling in terms of our media.
Yeah, it's just sad.
Because you can't
have that. If you try to talk like Hitchens talked about religion. And I always find it interesting when the religion crowd goes to this place. Well, you have to show respect for my faith. No, I don't. No, I don't. You have no respect for my lack of it.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, how much disrespect was manifested by all those Christians who said, well, yeah, maybe he'll convert on his deathbed. So, in other words, they were praying for him to become a hypocrite?
Yeah, I mean,
just like them, maybe? Is that the point?
It's it is a serious problem, because, you know, when you have that conversation with your children or your teaching kids about this, trying to explain the double standard in media without getting any hot water regarding religious faith is getting harder and harder. But it's so obvious that we give Christianity basically a hall pass for every single thing that they do.
Right. Yeah, and if you say, well, you know, they've only killed millions of people since in the 2,000 years since Jesus was murdered. Well, what about Stalin? What about Pol Pot? What about Hitler? And you go, Hitler died a Christian, said that Germany's was a Christian fight. Pol Pot, raised in his religion. Stalin was actually a singer in an Orthodox choir and went to Orthodox seminary. Next! But yeah, David in Tennessee notes, today on Talk of the Nation, NPR, there was a segment on Hitchens' impact. Callers were encouraged. A caller from Moorhead, Kentucky, and I know Moorhead, Kentucky, called in and said in a pure Eastern Kentucky accent, I was afraid to even mention my feelings and knowledge of religion and what I didn't believe in. I read Hitchens in my early 20s, and suddenly I'd been give my voice. Right there, I had the courage to tell folks I wasn't signing on to all that nonsense. So there is the value of Hitchens.
Yeah, exactly. His whole in-depth study into religious fanaticism and the power of belief and all of that was all valid for the negative side of him when it came to the war on terror, which to me I just saw as total grandstanding, and he had no room for any real when you did question him on these issues,
And remember, the other thing for which he should be heroically praised is the fact that when nobody else was doing it with any real passion, he stood up and defended Salman Rushdie against yet other groups of religious fanatics.
Right. Yeah, there are so many things that Hitchens had value to. I always liked the fact when he was on Bill Maher, he wasn't afraid to drink on a live on a live.
Well, I don't think he could have appeared without it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, that was part of his personality, his character. That's what he needed to get him through the day. Just like what John Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night.
It's all right. It's all right.
All right. Yeah, there isn't that much you can much more you can say about Hitchens. I think we summed it up on that.
I think we did. David, good talking to you, brother. Have yourself a good weekend.
All right, you too, Bob.
All right, see ya.
All right, later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine with what looks to be or sounds to be a resounding recommendation for The Cave. I'm going to watch it probably this evening. So if you've got Netflix, you might want to have a look, too. Speaking of Netflix, had an email in from our buddy Isaac. He says, because of you, Bob, I watched The Last Mountain on Netflix Tuesday. The former governor, that would be Joe Manchin, and the coal mine representative, his name is... why does it escape me? Well, probably because I loathe him so much. The coal mine representative in the restaurant interview was an ass. Yes, absolutely, Isaac. Thank you for informing me about this movie. Very good movie. And sad, too. And there is an element of sadness to it, but by the same token, there's an element of hope, because when you meet the people in that film who are so thoroughly dedicated, who have literally given their lives to... Bo Webb, for instance, he won the Purpose Prize. And that's for people who've already had a career and turn around and wind up having another one doing something just trying to help their community. Well, Bo Webb has the right to be and the ability to be on a beach somewhere kicking back and just enjoying life. But he's not going anywhere. He's not running away. He's standing with his feet firmly planted on the ground and saying, hell no, to the people who don't give a damn about whom they poison and whom they kill. And you know what? You can take away hope from that. Because as long as there are people like Bo Webb, like Maria Gano, like Judy Bonds, who gave her life, who, with cancer growing in her brain, stood in a peaceful protest line and was punched in the head by a mountaintop removal supporter thug. That's hopeful. It's painful, but it's hopeful. And by the way, this in from our good friend Darlene. She says, Bob, I would be happy to issue a challenge to your listeners. This evening, I'll match donations up to $100. So Darlene has pledged $100 to help keep the horn going and help meet our monthly fundraising goal in exchange for $100 coming in from other listeners. Okay? So there you have it. It's a great way to double it. It's a great way to double your contribution. So for the first $100 that comes in, there's a $100 match coming from our good friend Darlene, and I will update you through the course of the program. 24 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program,
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, man, you sounded hella pissed off early in your call. I see David seemed to have livened up your mood a bit.
Well, I need, and you know what? On a Friday, I need that, Sandra, because when I saw that BS about how they're going to fix McDowell County without addressing the root cause of what's wrong, it's worse than It's cynical, Sandra. It's hateful.
Well, especially when you read the people involved, it's just, you know, you just think, oh God, it's a joke, you know, because they're all so disingenuous and horrifying, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, the people really don't matter. I mean, that's the gist of what you're saying to me.
Yeah, it is.
And if you bring out some, if you mention that Michelle Ray person, I mean, you know, she really should be taken out and sort of, you know, hogtied that one. She's outrageous. And, I mean, there's been countless study after study after study that makes direct correlation with statistics and, you know, regressive whatever charts to prove that poverty is a huge factor in performance of kids in K through 12 and earlier.
Yeah, because poverty impacts the ability to eat.
Yeah, well, no, it's just, but it's commonsensical. Yet we've had study after study that proves that it exists. Yet all we hear from the powers that be is that, oh, they can't throw any more money at it. That's not the problem. It is the problem. I mean, it's just absurd. And it's so transparent, you know, what's going on.
Well, in that Washington Post article, there was a part that I didn't read about how the little girl's family was having a rare night out. They were going out to dinner one night. And going out to dinner constituted going to the Subway. You know, Subway.
Yeah.
You know, where the bread is loaded with what was it? It's a chemical. Their whole wheat loaf is made brown by the addition of a chemical, not by using whole wheat flour.
It's not like whole grain.
No. And there's loads of, what is it, maltodextrin, the stuff that the dry form of high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, no. It's yeah.
And the meats are night chemical laden nightmares. But you know, that's their night out, and that's when they get to feel good about themselves. And of course, it shows up in a Washington Post article because that gives it the human angle. It disgusts me. I said, it's like that business with Diane Sawyer and Mountain Dew Mouth. That was 3 years ago, and I'm still not over it.
Well, no, but when you have sort of census numbers coming out that one in two people are now poor or low income, see, we're now talking into hundreds of millions of people who are being decimated now. And, you know, I kind of joked, I don't know, I'm always talking this to you, about the Guatemalan model, but listen, these statistics are sort of making that glib comment come true.
Yeah, that's fast approaching this ain't funny McGee territory,
yeah,
you know?
You know, that's, you know, so, and at the same time, we have, you know, the 150 million people who are just struggling in this country, and we have six Walmart people who didn't lift a finger to earn this money worth as much as 100 million Americans combined. I'll say that again. Six people have as much wealth as 100 million Americans right now. Now, that's some revolution shit right there.
Yeah, how do you justify that?
No justification for it. Those people should, I don't care. You know, I know all about negative freedom and freedom this and freedom that bullshit. But at this point, those people do not need to have that money. It needs to be liberated. I don't care what I sound like. I don't care if Stalin's flashing across people's heads. Don't give a fuck. That is disgusting.
Yeah, but there's a further distinction to be made, I think, Sandra, and that is this. As evil as they were, the Rockefellers, the Andrew Mellons, the Carnegie, Henry Huddleston Rogers, all of those people had done something.
That's what I'm saying. These people are...
And those six Walmart heirs?
Yeah, they just inherited it, happened to be born. Like, you know, what the so-called founding fathers were fighting against, this sort of inbred aristocracy. You know, I mean, you've seen some of the... I don't know if it was Patrick Henry or which writer wrote about them in a most amazing way, describing the aristocracy in England. Just brutal. Well, that's what we got going on now with these people. Because those Waltons are no more entitled to that money than I am. Okay?
If that's the case, how do you describe a world in which some sort of wild-ass cosmic accident, Sandra, makes one person born a Walton and makes 10 million people born Congolese who will be slaughtered in their sleep?
Right. Well, no, I mean, but it's just, no, what I'm saying, though, is that, mankind has a wherewithal not to have this kind of situation. This is the thing. That's what's really disturbing about it all. You know, this isn't what should be going on right now. And I think it's beyond disgusting, that statistic. It overwhelmed me. I was like, wow. You know, it's this country. It's no wonder, you know, shit is bubbling up. You can't have that type of discrepancy. It just cannot go on.
Not have a country that refers to itself in any sense whatsoever as being even remotely related to democracy. Oh, hell no.
And when I hear those sort of statistics and I look and see, I say, yeah, I know why they're trying to codify indefinite detention of this motherfucker. Yeah, they better get on it. Because if you have that sort of discrepancy going on now in this country, rapidly going to the Guatemalan model, well, you better have a system to hold the people back.
Got to have somewhere to put them.
Like I always said, you know, at the end of the day, people will wait a little longer, but they're not going to starve.
No.
Not when there's this much wealth floating around up in this mug, and all these guns. I mean, it may be hell, but, you know, I just don't see it. I mean, what happened the last time we were in this situation? You know, we lucked out and got a Roosevelt, and I say lucked out for those rich people because Roosevelt was the buffer between. He wasn't fucking around. He saved their asses, too.
Well, that's the absolute truth, and I guess they don't understand.
Well, I don't know. I think people just lose. They just lose the sort of historical memory of, you know, what is really at play here. Because, unfortunately for me, I've been reading Richard Hofstadter. Have you heard him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, this is one quote right here. He was talking about somebody else who was writing about Beard, who wrote the economic whatever for the Constitution. But this person wrote that, this Beard drew heavily, put much emphasis upon the debtor-creditor conflict under the Article of Confederation. He found that the state system under the Articles had acted as a shield for the debtor classes. I mean, you know, this shit's just been going on since day one. See, I've always been a big fan of Articles of Confederate.
And see, you know, it's,
there's a lot to it.
Well, and you're ahead of the curve on that because I am reminded of the really big dose of learning that I got from Dr. Bill and Professor Keith Lilly when they were talking about and others of their academic superstars that they invited into the Prism Academy. And one of the things that was pointed out was that it was a deliberate effort to paint the Articles of Confederation as an abject failure, when in fact they were not.
No. I mean, there is some really, you know, interesting aspects of it, mainly who it was representing. You look at the interior agriculture concerns, which translates directly to the populism that popped up a century later. So that tension is just across the board. Unfortunately, the average person don't have access to the agrarian world anymore. You know, we're in the major slums like Calcutta mentality right now. That's why stuff is going to get really ugly because...
And that's why our good buddy Joe Bajant, now gone almost a year, wrote in...
Hasn't been that long.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe it. But, you know, in Rainbow Pie, which basically came out after he died and forms a sort of valedictory on his life, he goes to great lengths to explain that in the post-World War II world, there was a deliberate effort to drive people like his people, his extended family, off their land and into the cities.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the same model that these development economists use in the third world. You know, they destroy the agriculture sector to drive the people into the city, and it doesn't work because, oh, there's not enough food. And then they turn it into, we import all the food. You know, the whole model is really sick. But anyway, I'm sort of drifting.
Well, but you're really not, because it was in 2000, I remember very well, it was in 2004, Sandra, when I first read, and it was the first year it had happened, the year that the United States became a net importer of food. It was the first year since like 1946, or maybe even longer, that the United States had imported more of the food it consumed than it grew itself. And in 2004, I was sitting there going, I don't, and we had a lot of right-wingers and crazy people in the audience back then because it was terrestrial radio. And I said, I don't know if you people understand this, but that is a harbinger of bad, bad things. And there hasn't, I haven't seen anything, maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't seen anything since, Sandra, to suggest that that's changed, that we remain a net importer of food.
Yeah, no, I'm not too sure of the status of that, because, you know, the way our resources are controlled, you know, they're not controlled by, you know, the people anymore, i.e., I didn't realize we provided so much grain for Egypt. So while Egypt is doing this revolution, you know, we control their food supply, so...
And, you know, because of the relaxation,
problematic down the road for them if they really want to have freedom from the military. Anyway,
and I can't remember if it was under the Clinton or the Bush administration, but those rules that had been rather stridently enforced, that the one thing you were not going, that we were not going to let the 1% class speculate on and turn into a profit vehicle, was the very essence of the very necessities of life in countries like Egypt. But that rule went away, and that is why things came to a head in Egypt like they did, because they could not afford their bread. You know, David from Maine mentioned Tony Bourdain at the top of his call, and the fact of the matter is, Bourdain has since talked about the episode that they shot in Egypt. And they had a minder from the Mubarak government who followed them around and did everything possible to make sure that they didn't show any workaday Egyptians eating the diet that ordinary workaday Egyptians eat, which is basically peas porridge with lentils and some flatbread.
Yeah, they can't. The Egypt as it is now can't feed its own people. You know, they require imports of food, and you know that whole scenario leaves you. You know, you're not really a sovereign nation if you can't control your food. You know. More so than your money at this point, because you need to feed the people.
And by the way, we were talking about the icky food at Subway.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to love this. Tamara just wrote in. And she, the subject line on the email, Sandra, says, not food porn. She said, you were talking about the crap found in the bread at Subway. What you didn't mention is that most bread contains an additive called L-cysteine.
Oh, I'm scared of that. What is
Well,
that?
It's an amino acid. And one source of that amino acid is human or animal hair harvested in China and India.
Mm.
Soylent Green is people, Sandra.
The same hair that's stolen from the black-owned hair salons. Yeah, I know. Mm.
And that goes back to what you said about, no, we don't have access to the land.
Well, and no, I'm just, you know, it's just kind of, you know, I guess the whole Europe thing, and that also plays into the Articles of Confederacy, because, see, they're trying to subject those poor people in Europe, and, you know, slap me for saying this, but I almost have to agree with Cameron. I'm like, oh, no, I got to go. I know he got criticized, but I'm thinking about it. I'm like, listen, he may have vetoed it for the wrong reason to protect his financial backers in the City of London, but... what they're trying to do to Europe is a joke. They're subjecting those people to a decade of austerity. They're never going to grow out of it. It's such a huge mistake.
And it's something they're never going to back away from and say, okay, let's take everything back to normal. What you see here, if we can dare to think just a little more deeply on this, and you and I are both guilty of that, what you're seeing, I think, is the capitalist response to the fact that the capitalists realize that capitalism is dying. So the only way to respond is to make the poor poorer and aggregate more wealth into the hands of the wealthy few, and then sort of chemicalize and machinize and industrialize what food supply is remaining, so that really, well, I guess it's time to go and reorder Soylent Green again. You know what I mean?
Well, but the problem with the European thing, though, is that they're starting to face open rebellion from countries like Poland and a few others. They're not going to go with it because they know what it entails. It means the politics can't survive what Germany has in store for everybody there. And I say Germany or whatever you want to call it, Brussels. Forgive me, Brussels.
Well, but then there's Belgium. I was on the road, Sandra, when I heard the story about that.
That fool shooting up everybody?
Yeah, and grenades. Right. And the Belgian government was really, and forgive me, but this is just my paranoia getting loose. But the Belgian government was really quick to say, no, now everybody be calm. This was not an act of terrorism. This guy was a local nut that we've known about, and he does. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but, you know, Belgium is right in the thick of, you know, a financial tsunami. That country's in a bad way. But I just don't really think that the little summit is going to work. I mean, they're asking the countries to keep cutting and shrinking their tax base. So how are they ever going to, you know, pay the debts? You see what I mean? It's just, it is such a bad situation. But they can't quite get the Constitution because they need people, the people, to ratify, and they know that the people won't, because who's going to cut their own throat? We're back at that again, you know, where people won't starve. They won't starve by themselves with encouragement.
Yeah, because among other things, I don't think European voters, now, if that was all being done here in the United States, all they'd have to say is, do it for Jesus.
Well, yeah.
And the voters would flock, and it would be 51-49%, and you know, gavel to the desk, and motion carries. I mean, Jesus Christ, if you're watching Iowa right now, it's at this point, it's Gilbert and Sullivan. It's comic opera.
Well, that's why it's always you're always weary when you hear about anybody talking about, oh, we need a new constitution. No. We don't need nothing.
I don't have 5 seconds for the people who want a constitutional convention.
No, I just am like, good, no.
I don't need some delegate standing up, just like out of Idiocracy. Brought to you by Carl's Jr. Oh, and the chair recognizes the delegate from Exxon. The chair recognizes the delegate from BP.
Right.
Uh-uh.
No,
I don't want to live in that world. But on the other hand, while we've got our little paranoias out, one of my favorite bloggers over at Crooks and Liars, and one of my favorite bloggers, period, Susie Madrak, Texas Betsy, sent this along to me, Sandra. Someone's polling New Hampshire to see whether Republican voters are interested in, drum roll please, Jeb Bush.
Okay, well, that's in the deep recesses of the horn. We know what time it is. If that nigga pops up, I'm going to be like, oh, no, you know. Well, listen, they're scrambling right now because Ron Paul is just polling too strong for them freaks. They can't handle him. I can't handle him, but they certainly can't handle his no war. That's causing these people's heads to explode. I mean, it's going to roll if Paul starts winning these little caucuses, because apparently he has a really good on-the-ground type of organization, unlike Newt, who don't know what the hell he's doing in that regard. He's just a blowhard.
And, well, the other thing that's being pointed out is Newt has no money.
Well, he ain't got no money. And apparently, Romney is running his little billion-dollar organization, and they just kind of running ads against Newt nonstop. So his star is falling.
And that caucus process has always fascinated me, Sandra, because it's not the same as going to the polls and voting. It really is caucusing.
Yeah, no, it is. It's something, it's something out of,
And so if, and there's nothing out there to indicate that Iowans are just crazy about, electing a guy who wears magic underwear.
Well, no,
And they're not crazy about Newt. Newt's plummeting like a paralyzed falcon.
Right, as he should. I mean, he's just horrific.
No, but you said it. Can you imagine if weird little creepy Emperor Palpatine Ron Paul comes out of Iowa in a strong second, or God forbid, even wins? You know, they nicknamed Clinton the comeback kid in New Hampshire because he came in second.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Apparently, all the sort of, you know, the GOP and Radio Rwanda is coming out hard against Paul. They're freaking out, apparently, with Hannity and all these other people nightly slamming him because they can't deal. They can't deal with his foreign policy. And, you know, one thing you can say about Ron Paul is he's consistently frightening, but he's consistent.
Yeah, and, you know, where the war stuff is concerned, he's right for the wrong reasons.
Well, he...
But if he gets through South Carolina with any kind of a decent showing, and he shows decently in New Hampshire...
Shut up.
Well,
yeah.
Then if he goes down to South Carolina and starts talking to those weirdos, it's life's going to get real fun, because I don't care if Nikki Haley endorses Romney or not. One, Nikki Haley is rapidly being despised in her state.
Oh, yeah, no.
And two, even those South Carolinians will gladly go and shoot anybody you ask them to shoot, and sometimes shoot people you ask them not to. They're going to respond. That libertarian message has a real tasty little zing to it when you're talking to a bunch of states' rights Southerners.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, no, I mean, basically, the Republican side is looking well entertaining, like popcorn type of entertaining. But listen, I have to ask, did you see that article about this fool that wants to keep his iron, no whites only pool sign?
Oh, I'm just loving that. But,
you
good
know,
God.
I just was like, oh, my God. Or as I say to the girls, OMG. That's all we say all day.
Yeah, OMG, OMG. OMG, LOLROFLMAO.
Right. And it's just like, good night.
Oh, and will not apologize.
No, he wants it to be reversed. He ran that family out because they said, oh, no, shit, we out. So they moved, as they should. Anybody who want to preserve themselves and they're black would just get on. But... this guy has the nerve to want to, is fighting it. It's unbelievable.
Well, and do you know the genesis of this, right? You know why this creep hung the sign?
Well, I thought it was because there was a black girl who was wanting to swim.
Well, not just that. No, apparently she got in the pool, Sam.
Oh, God, Lord.
And he said that she was using chemicals in her hair that made the water cloudy.
Listen, that's a good one. Oh yeah, that's new and original. Hello?
I don't have any problem with race at all. It's a historical sign.
Right, but you had enough time to get a steel fucking iron sign made? Who made the sign? That's my next question.
Well, but the weird thing is it didn't get it made. It's dated 1931 and claims to come from Alabamistan.
You lying.
Nope.
Oh, shit.
It's an antique.
An antique, yes. Why am I not surprised? I forgot where I was living.
You know, it's just like a lawn jockey or some mammy pottery.
Right, or some postcards with some lynching. Yeah, I got you. Right.
And this is, of course, a woman. This is not some guy. Which, you know, for some reason that makes it different for me, and it's probably sexist on my part to say that, and I apologize for it. But
oh, you mean the landlady? It's a landlady?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a dude. See, I was looking at the article. I just assumed. See, that's me too. I'm thinking it's just another, you know, crack.
Yeah, Jamie Hine, H-E-I-N, is 31 years old. She said she collects antiques and was given the sign as a gift.
She needs a gift. I got a gift for her.
But truth be told, as hateful and heinous as this stuff is, I want more stories like this. I want all of America to be confronted with what it means to be a good old-fashioned Tea Party-loving, Tea Party patriot, white American Republican. Is there any, to the extent that there's any doubt left, Sandra, and is there any doubt left... I want the right wing who said, you know, I don't have anything against black people. I want them to confront this. Well, you know, that's just one person. No, it's your whole freaking party.
What? Not all Republicans are racist, but all racists
are Republicans. Yes, universal affirmatives are only partially convertible. Yes.
Well, yeah. No, anyway, I mean, I don't. You know, that story, like, it didn't even make. You know, it didn't. I was just shaking my head, thinking, "Oh my God, you know what? It's pathetic." You know. But anyway.
But there are a couple of those Lulu stories up there. I love the fact that one of the founders of the tea baggers, got taken down. This is just precious. This broke today. Tea Party Patriots founder Mark Meckler.
Yeah.
Got arrested early this morning at LaGuardia.
Tried to get a gun, right?
Yeah, tried to board a flight with a semi-automatic handgun and its ammunition in his carry-on.
Okay, well, so that's he sounds like he's a candidate for indefinite detention, right?
You know, absolutely. It's a second degree criminal possession of a weapon felony. This is New York City, right?
Well, they sent that Plexico Burris to jail for shooting himself in the leg. So this guy needs to go away for like 20, 30, 40 years, right?
Up to 15 years in prison. But here's the fun part. Did Plexico get a personal recognizance bond, or did they slap his ass in jail?
No, he was out. He reported in to go to jail. Yeah, he was out.
Well, this guy gets a PR bond, a personal recognizance bond. You don't have to call the bail bondsman. Nobody has to put up their property in the Hamptons.
Okay,
you just sign your name and promise you'll show up.
But if he was of any other color than white, no. No way that he would be out after doing
right.
Something
and,
like that.
Right, and, you know, that's the point. Dig this. You know, it's not like, this is at LaGuardia International Airport, okay? It's not like dude is from New York. He's not from, you know, he's not from Brooklyn or the Bronx or anywhere else. He's got a concealed carry permit from California. And the guy gets a personal recognizance bond.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I guess it's just, you know, it's just so many tiers of justice is making my head spin in this country. I can't keep up.
And I love this line. He apparently expected that his out-of-state license would be valid and that he was complying with all laws.
Well,
that reminds me of the Katrina thing. You know, the white people are foraging, but the black people are looting.
And also, if you're white, excuses can be made, and if you're of color, it's just off to jail.
Yeah, goodbye. Do not pass go. But it's like the story that came out yesterday of and we've talked about it in the past, these piling upon stories of people who get pulled over for a loud muffler and wind up going off to jail because they've got an unpaid civil debt.
Yeah, oh no, that's popping up. I mean, TPM, I guess, has this whole article about the return of debtors prison. And I'm thinking to myself, weren't we talking about this 2 years ago?
Isn't it fun to be so far out in front of the curve? We're on straight road.
I'm just like, yeah, and shit.
I mean, I'm gonna say this because it's a moment of shameless self-promotion, Sandra. But while I was driving, the car I was in, it was a rental, had satellite radio.
Oh, yeah, no, that's great.
And, well, I don't have one, so I very seldom get to listen to it.
No, I'm saying, I know, I recently drove in a car that had one too, and I thought fantastic, but anyway.
And I was actually listening, and I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but I was listening in the 6 to 9 p.m. slot last night, because that's when I was driving. And in the course of doing this program, I give myself a lot of hell. I am my own toughest critic. Sometimes I feel like, you know, maybe you really do need to be working at Walmart, Bob. And bless his heart, I listen to Mark Thompson, and I'm feeling real good about the work we do here. Because he opened his program with Marcos Melitzis opining about what the hell ever. And the thing is, I was thinking, and I don't want to be taken the wrong way, but I was thinking, there is not a soul that calls the horn that couldn't do better radio than what I'm getting out of this conversation right now.
Oh, wow. Listen, no.
Because Marcus was kind of mailing it in, and, you know, but I just feel better about what we do here.
Oh, no, listen, I think that, you know, the conversations that I hear on this, on your show are, the only other interaction I hear that I completely enjoy is Sam Cedar and his conversation with Cliff Schechter. They have great chemistry.
Well, and Sam is just awesome radio.
Right, and it's and just those two there, it's a must listen to segment. It's fantastic. But most of the stuff is just hella drivel, and I'm forever laughing when Mike Malloy is talking about, well, we don't really take calls. And I'm thinking, yes, do not, and continue so, because so many times. If I may say so, I know I'm sounding like some sort of bitch, but, you know, there's no chemistry. There's nothing going on in the chit-chat. It's like, yeah, you're saying what? Oftentimes I'm like, okay, can't, turning it down, waiting for the damn callers to finish. What the fuck you saying? So, you know, I'm bad for that. If it ain't moving along and kind of snappy and going places, I'm off.
And see, that's the thing I love about what's going on here. During the calls, you know, people are emailing in and offering thoughts, and it kind of gets a three-way, four-way, five-way feel to it. And for instance, talking about the Tea Party Patriots founder who signed his name and got to walk away on bond from a charge that carries a 15-year freaking felony. David in Tennessee just said, I can't remember the exact number, but trust me, Plaxico posted a big-ass bond. He was in for 8 hours until the state of New York and New York City were convinced he had the cake to be good for the bonding out.
Oh, okay.
But meanwhile, Teabagger Dude just says, oh, sign here. Okay.
Oh, no.
Goodbye now.
I think the whole idea is the guy went to jail for as long as he did for what happened is outrageous. That's why I brought him up, because I'm thinking, well, in New York, apparently it's all hard and your ass goes straight to jail, and you're telling me that this guy is just waiting around. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, and who was that stupid little bastard in the football game a couple of weeks ago who celebrated, I don't know, a pass by pretending to shoot himself in the leg?
Didn't he get fined, too?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just so much. No, but anyway, it's like with your conversation with what's his name from Maine?
David, yeah.
David, you know, those conversations are always, you know, great. A1, same thing with the Nautilus guy. I'm really slow today with the names. Oh, my God, your writer, Kevin.
Oh, David in Tennessee.
Reverbo.
Oh, Reverbo, yeah.
You know, there's different people. Everyone has their own style, but, you know, you kind of keep the conversation going with the various personalities, and Lord knows you have to deal with all sorts of personalities. That's nothing like a show that kills me, because you're able to handle that, because there's so many different types that be calling into your show. I don't know how you keep up with them.
Well, you know, that's the thing I love, though, because I was just driving down the road, and I really was. I was in this sort of analytical place in my head, and this is not a direct criticism of Marcus Melitzis or whatever. You know, he's got his millions, he's got a good life, whatever. But I was thinking, you know, we really have sort of met a mission here, Sandra, and that is to give people an opportunity to be the experts they are, because, you know, it's funny. I didn't listen to that interview thinking, you know, gosh, when it's over, I sure wish I was there where they are, because I'd love to go out for a beer with them. But you don't know the emails I get saying I'd love to sit down to lunch with Juanita, or wow, wouldn't it be fun to hang out with Sandra? Well, actually, you get marriage proposals. Run around with Reverbo, or you know, I'd love to watch a football game with David in Tennessee. And it goes on and on and on and on, and it proves a point that there really is a native level of expertise in ordinary people that the vast majority of talk radio does not allow to come out.
Well, yeah, no. You know, I mean, it's just kind of, I'm amazed by just sort of the level of expertise you know, on your show. It gets all sorts of people from all across the country. You know what I mean? It's very hopeful. Trust me. I mean, that's why I like to participate, because, you know, the show does a lot for me. I'm forever waiting to hear from, you know, Andy.
Yeah.
Who I love dearly, because, you know, he has a bit of an edge that's like off the chain, and it's great because it translates fantastic over radio, you know?
And by the way, and see, this is how it works. By the way, this just came in from Marty, who lives kind of out in your neck of the woods, and he just says, ask Sandra her thoughts on Barry Bonds' sentence.
Well, I was surprised that they didn't take him to jail. I said, oh, that Negro lucked out.
I was... Sorry, I was surprised too. I expected somebody, you know, I expected the Acme company to drop an anvil on him too.
No, because they tend to be trying to lock up these sports people, like, especially if, well, what can I say? These black stars, they put them in jail without a blink, you know. And I know he's not an athlete, but, you know, is Wesley Snipes? Is that poor boy still languishing?
Yeah, he's still making the little ones out of big ones.
You know, and I just sort of shake my head, because in the meanwhile, you have that MF Global bastard testifying. No, you need to be in jail.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know. Did you catch that? No, I don't know where the money is.
Oh, my God, no, it just epitomizes the sort of multi-tier justice system, because, you know, I didn't hear that woman who got sentenced to 3 years for getting food stamps. She wasn't invited to testify. Oh, no. She was just invited to a 3-year sentence in Leavenworth, or wherever the hell she is.
There you go. And again, one of those great moments in for-profit 1% media. I get email alerts, just like you probably do, from the New York Times.
Yeah.
And I love the Barry Bonds alert. NewYorkTimes.com news alert. News alert. Barry Bonds avoids prison time for giving evasive testimony. Really? Would it say that if it was John Corzine, that he had avoided prison time? You see what I avoided prison time? You know, why? Maybe I'm not making any sense, but no. How about because, you know, you click on the link and Barry Bonds, baseball's home run champion, avoided prison term Friday when Judge Susan Ilston sentenced him to 30 days of blah blah blah. So how is it that he avoided prison time? No. He was, how about Barry Bonds gets 30 days house arrest?
Exactly. No, I'm like, and it's just sort of, you know, they couldn't let it go. They had to sort of, that definitely is a really suspect headline. Wow.
But that's, you know, it's what I've come to expect, and I guess there's nothing new to it, but it's what I've come to suspect over the years. From the for-profit media, and Marty noting, you know, after Barry Bonds, you know Roger Clemens is out there somewhere breathing a huge sigh of relief. But then again, if Roger Clemens's ass got sentenced to 30 days, the headline would say Roger Clemens gets 30 days house arrest, and it wouldn't talk about him avoiding prison. You know, because it makes it sound like, you know, there's some wild-eyed black man on the loose running. Where are the white women?
Yeah, no, it does, you know, it's definitely, you know, but on the other side of that, you have this poor, unfortunate idiot who's like, oh, my God, there's a lockout. Let me become a big-time coke dealer. You hear about that dude?
No.
A Chicago Bear got arrested because he was talking to an FBI agent about buying several kilos.
You know, don't talk to anybody about buying kilos of coke. The only people who have kilos of coke to sell are FBI agents.
Well, and it's just like, dude, you, a professional football player, panicking about you're being locked out, so you had to organize another revenue stream. I'm like, oh, my God. So I didn't get all the details, but I'm shaking my head thinking, wow, you know, stupid is not far from some of these professional athletes.
Well, just remember, they were student athletes, emphasis upon athlete. You know, you can be a student athlete in this country, and I don't care what anybody says. You can go through 4 years of college and not see the inside of English 101.
Oh, no, I know. But anyway, I just thought that was like, oh, my God, ridiculous. So, you do get the non-ending trail of idiots from the professional ranks.
Well, I do have to ask you, because our buddy John in New York sent this in, and even though I was on the road, I read the article. Did you see what Dave Zirin wrote about the on-court brawl between the University of Cincinnati and Xavier University basketball teams?
I didn't see that because I heard about that story. I thought, oh, my God, because they were really going on and on. It was just going on and on and on. What did he say about it?
Well, he pointed out that, A, it's Cincinnati, and the Cincinnati prosecuting attorney had basically come out and said, well, you know, we're going to look at criminal charges against these people.
Now they're doing that? Because, see, I was, like, thinking when that one baby came out talking about, oh, we a bunch of gangsters. I'm like, no, fool, back the hell up.
Shut up. Yeah.
I was like, baby, what are you doing? Where are your parents? You know, that's what I was thinking when I heard that kid talk. I'm like, do not talk about that you some thugs in training up in here.
And it turns out that the Hamilton County prosecutor has a history. His name is, let me find it here. It won't take me but a second, sorry.
Cincinnati is where Jamie is, the, whites only bitch.
Yeah, that's true. the prosecuting attorney, has this history of, weirdness. He used to put out, he maintains a friendship with a guy in Cincinnati named Jim Schifrin. And he's the author of a Cincinnati rag described as a racist political tip sheet called The Whistleblower.
You know, Cincinnati is a place where, you know, black people were being shot once a week.
Yeah, 15 of them. 15.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So, nasty ass place. But, so what, he's thinking about prosecuting who?
Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters released a statement that his office is considering a series of charges that could include include assault and battery or disorderly conduct. And, Zirin points out no one condones fighting on the court, but the idea that college basketball players could go to prison speaks to the worst kind of hypocrisy and the most twisted traditions of the city of Cincinnati, a place with a history of institutional racism that would make Mississippi blush.
Right. No, Cincinnati is off the hook with this. Wow. No, I didn't know it had gotten that deep. I knew that I was sort of cringing when I heard the ball player talking about, you know, his peeps, and I'm like, no. I didn't know it had gone that far.
Well, and Zirin closes his piece by saying, the players involved have expressed all the right remorse. Cincinnati guard Yancey Gates, suspended for 6 games, wept deeply on camera, saying, I'm just not that kind of person. A lot of people have been calling me a thug, a gangster.
6 games?
Yeah.
That should be enough.
That's pretty brutal.
I mean, it's I don't know. I can't even believe they're taking it this far. Wow, okay.
He says, the fact that this is a rivalry both schools have ginned up over the years to the point where the tensions transcended baseball. The more hype, the more tickets, the higher profile for the programs, and the higher revenues. It's been played up as the large public school against the elite small Catholic school, with every provincial prejudice tied up on which side you stand in a game the schools themselves call the crosstown shootout.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, I mean, a really good friend of mine went to Xavier. It is. It's a very...
It's hot.
It's a very elitist... Yeah, it's definitely a Catholic... Yeah.
And he finishes by saying, but the players themselves don't share these differences of class and community. They are gladiators thrown against each other for the joy of boosters on both sides. Now they're facing the judgment of a man like Joe Dieters. And then this line. Oh, my God, this line. This is going to... strap in, Sandra. Somewhere, a toothless French-Canadian on skates is breathing a sigh of relief he doesn't play hoops in the city of Cincinnati. You know,
exactly. No, and it's just kind of... You remember how over the top it was when they had the big NBA brawl? Remember how long and how people went over the deep end when they had that brawl?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's like, wait a minute, you guys are really going over the top with this. Then you think, oh, shit, it's black men. Now I know why.
Yeah, never mind all the white people on the hockey rinks, you know, basically beating the snot out of each other.
That one, half his brain was gone when he was found dead at 27, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he was some sort of brawler. You know, and the hockey thing is always okay. We know why it's okay, Bob. We know.
Yeah, we kind of do, don't we?
And it's just, and you know, I don't listen. I ain't got nothing against. I've laughed at some of the hockey brawls I've seen. I'm like, damn, these fools crazy.
Well, I love that old comic chestnut. You know, I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out.
You know, shit, they don't mess around. But I'm not sitting there thinking, oh wow, you know, let's send them up for 5 to 10.
No, but you know what? We've got a private prison industrial complex, and you got to feed the machine, right? Because Alabama wants to pick tomatoes with prison labor.
And once you take the jerseys off the black men, well, they can just blend right in, right? What's the difference? No, it's bad. Listen, I have to mention this, though, because I actually have to tweet this, and I got a lot of flack from people, you know, because I said Patriots. I'm not a fan, but they need to crush Denver. Okay.
Yeah, badly. And you know, for once in my life, I'm rooting with everything I've got for the guy in the hoodie.
I don't care. I'm just gonna be like, please, I want 50-2. And because the Patriots they're fucking brutal, you know they're gonna come there with something in mind. Please, 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 don't let it get to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I think there's some fellas playing on it that you know, the Patriots, they got a lot of pride at this point.
And I heard
the other day, it was ESPN or whatever, and somebody was saying, well, you know, the Patriots defense is suspect, so look for Tim Tebow to have a great game because he's a competitor.
No, I look for Tom Brady to F it up and F it up now. And the hoodie, you know the hoodie want to crush that. They warriors. I don't like the Patriots.
Well, I mean, the hoodie's got a history with John Fox because, you know, that was that Super Bowl between, what was it, the Panthers and the Patriots, wasn't it?
Okay.
And I think it was. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that was Brian Billick and the Ravens. But I think it was the hoodie, and John Fox was the coach of the Panthers. And that was a hell of a game. But, you know, I sent you your Tim Tebow bingo board, and
I'll be looking at that.
And I've been told since that John in New York will be playing Tim Tebow bingo with us.
Oh, yeah, well, no, I'm going to have to set that shit up. That's hilarious. No. Well, see, so, yeah, so I admit I'm hating, but I need to see this happen. I can't deal with another Monday morning of the Tim Tebow talk. God, is doing my head in.
Well, and it's the thing is, at least we're being consistent. We were haters from the get-go.
Oh,
and I will damn sure, I may be a lot of things in this life, but I will never, ever be a bandwagoneer.
No. When that bitch was in Florida, the hate was on. Let's be honest.
Oh. Well, I mean, everything changed for me with that story the other night about him, his mission trips to the Philippines to help do circumcisions. You know, I slice you in the name of the Father and the Son and the... Oh, missed a stitch.
Yes, too. But no, just, I mean, who was I listening to today where, you know, I'm like, I had to, you know, just turn it off with that... Skip Bayless. It's like, oh my God, do you want to sleep with dude? The way he was going on and on.
Oh, the fawning has reached repulsive proportions.
Yes, yeah, so I could.
But I still want that extra box on the bingo board if I have to draw it in.
Well, I just, you know, because, you know, I just, Tom Brady, he just cannot fail me. This has to come to an end this week.
Well, this is legacy stuff. If he goes in there, if Tom Brady, who has been hagiographized himself as some sort of just manifestation of, he's like one of the Elgin marbles the way he's held up. Okay, this is the stuff they'll talk about. You know, Tom Brady. But a new era dawned when Tim Tebow.
Listen, Tom Brady quotes Ben Franklin, so he can at least go in there and...
Tom Brady made grades at Michigan. I don't like Michigan, but, you know, you gotta get in the school and out of the school.
Listen, like I said, I just need for him to... He just has to do this. He has to pull this off. I know. What do we sound like?
We're pathetic. No, we're pitiful.
Really?
And I'm going to get more emails about, dear Bob, I hate the sports talk. Please, no more Tebow. But at this point, I've become unhealthy about this.
It is. Listen, I promise there won't be no more of TiVo. If Brady does the job, silence on the set, quiet on the Western Front, all that.
You know, that one last week, 10 to 7?
Oh, God.
And that's only because the Bears' offense was, you know, trundling along on two wheels on a four-wheeled vehicle with one on each corner.
Yeah, I don't even understand what was going on with that. I don't.
The Bears' defense was, and Brady looked, Brady, I'm sorry, little Timmy looked terrible all game long.
Well, anyway, I just sort of, I don't know. So hopefully next week it'll be a different song that we're singing, because right now I'm so over the Tim Tebow.
I'm like you. I want to see one of those beatings where Tim comes up to the microphone after the game and says, you know, I've decided to devote my life to doing circumcisions in the Philippines. Goodbye, y'all.
No, because we know that the Patriots, and we know the hoodie, is capable of dealing out some beatdown. We know it. We've seen it.
Yeah.
So they don't need to hold back. That's all.
Just treat, pretend they're the Jets.
Oh, something, anything. But anyway, I don't know. I will schedule some time to check that game out.
A little Tebow bingo. Yeah. Oh, Sandra, have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
Bye now. Pretend. And I know when I said that, I just broke Texas Betsy's heart. She is a J-E-T-S, Jets fan. But no, really, really, Hoodie, tell the whole squad, pretend Denver is the Jets. And then they'll have to put an extra digit on the scoreboard to manage the yeah, right. We can do this. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm well. How about you?
Fine. First of all, I wanted to say that Johnny Cash song blew me away.
Wasn't that awesome? That just seemed to fit the moment so perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the name of that, of course, was What is Truth?
I mean, the words to it just...
And I get the idea that goes back to, like, the Vietnam conflict. But it sure was fresh and relevant right now, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if it was. I don't remember hearing it before. But I like that other song he's got. He's gonna get you one of these days, you know.
Yep.
But anyway.
Yeah, God's gonna cut you down.
Yeah. I got that for. I don't know. I'm not in a good mood about things now. About our situation. I think the Democrat sold us down the creek again, didn't he?
It depends on what you're talking about. Depends on which part. The sellout may be yet to come or done happened. Which part?
I don't know. I didn't understand. I wasn't watching the news yesterday. I saw some news. I don't mean that. But I understood that they had given in about the rich people.
Oh, yeah, that's gone. That's gone. Forget it.
And
yeah.
Then also about the amount of weeks for the unemployed.
Yeah, we're just going to kick that can into next year and hope that nobody's watching.
I mean, what else do you want, Bob? I mean, there's plenty more of it. You know, I think they sold us down the river.
Again. Don't forget the important preposition. Again.
And... Oh, right, and then you got that, what is that thing that, where they can put you in jail or...
Oh, indefinite detention, yeah.
Family again? Huh?
Yeah. Debtor's prison, indefinite... They're working night and day figuring out ways to put working people in prison. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm getting to where I feel like I'm wishing bad things, and I know it'll come back on me.
No, I don't think it will.
You don't?
No, because what you're doing, you're not wishing bad things. You're actually, hasn't the right wing told us that it's okay to engage in imprecatory prayer, Juanita?
Yeah, but I don't follow their teachings.
I know, but I mean, they did give it sanction. But I would say it's not even imprecatory. I would simply say that, and without knowing the specifics, I would simply say, Juanita, that you are engaging in invocations of the divine for manifestations of divine justice. How's that?
You're going to get me in trouble, Bob. Karma gets you, you know. But anyway, maybe you're right. You know, that's what you're talking like my son does to me. You know, I'll say, such and such is this, that, and, well, you know, not necessarily.
Well, I know. There's a reason I feel like Charles is a kindred spirit, then. You just proved it.
Yeah, he's kind of amazing to me. And I just wanted to say about Sandra. That girl is so amazing. And I say girl.
No, I'm not kidding. She gets marriage proposals.
Oh, I know, but, you know, she's so brilliant, and she says it in such a humorous way. You know, I love that when a person has that. That's my favorite kind of people to listen to, you know, like she's talking about Sam Cedar. I'm a big fan of Sam Cedar. And, you know, the people that I like, you know, they've got that about them, but she's amazing. She really is amazing. Her knowledge and her heart. She's got a big heart. You know.
Yes. Well, speaking of cave-ins, our buddy, another member of the Fraternity of Davids. He just wrote in from South Carolina, and it's a link. Good God, how many pop-ups can this thing do? Just a minute, I'll get all the pop-ups. Okay, there it is. Yeah, it comes from the Weekly Standard.
Uh-huh.
Source, Congress to approve Keystone Pipeline provision in budget deal. A Senate source tells the Weekly Standard that congressional leaders have worked out a two-month budget deal that includes a fully funded extension of the payroll tax cut. The deal will also require the Obama administration to decide within 60 days on whether or not it will approve construction of the Keystone oil pipeline. Now, President Obama had threatened to veto any deal that included that. Will he? I mean, do we really think he will?
Well, it's like that thing about treating us like they do in Guantanamo, is that he wasn't going to.
Daggummit. I think Juanita has some phone or computer problems. That's happened twice now. I hate that. But she's right. And frankly, what will you think if it turns out that, and I guess there's a modification, because the original plan from the Republicans said, well, we're just going to take that one's power to decide about the Keystone Pipeline away from him and give it to FERC, the Energy Regulatory Commission. So they went back and they did some compromising. Now, the compromise, if the Democrats had any guts, they'd say, no, this doesn't need to be part of that. We're going to have because what is it the Republicans always want? A straight up or down vote, right? There is no need to tie the Keystone XL pipeline to the well-being and the ability to continue eating of several tens of thousands, if not millions, of Americans. Millions of Americans. To continue eating. To continue being able to pay for heat in the dead of winter. To continue to be able to... Yeah, all of that. But the compromise is that, no, we won't give it to FERC. We'll just tell the president he has to decide within 60 days and not after the election. Heidi, it's another one of those moments where you just, there's no getting around it. The Republicans are playing chess, and we're playing checkers. We're not. Our eyes are wide open, and frankly, could sit down across the chessboard from Eric Cantor, leave Britney alone, or any of those other creeps any old time. You know, whether it's John Boehner or chinless Mitch McConnell, we could do that. But Harry Reid?
Mm.
Somehow I don't think so. So apparently this is what's going to go to the president's desk, and that is, to wit, an inclusion in this deal that will compel President Not Sure to decide on the Keystone XL pipeline in 60 days. And guess who has more than 60 days worth of money to mount a massive national effort to compel President Not Sure to say, yeah, sure, build the pipeline. Hint, it ain't our side. And it's going to be January and February in D.C., and the way the Republicans think is, oh, well, sure, that's all right for that communist Bill McKibben to bring his 12,000 people out to line up around the White House in you know, warm weather, but let's see if they'll do it in a foot of snow. See how they think? Because I guarantee you that's part of the decision-making. Nobody in their right mind protests in D.C. in February. And maybe that's, you know what? I think that I've been to D.C. I have protested in D.C. in below zero temperatures alongside of 10,000 other people. Ferg was one of them.
Hi.
There's Ferg.
Hello.
So maybe the Republicans are counting their chickens before they're hatched, because it will be necessary. It will be necessary if this is what winds up on the president's desk. By the way, with regard to the song that that Juanita mentioned, that is, of course, Johnny Cash. The song is What Is Truth? And David in Tennessee, who knows very much about these things, says that's from right in the middle of the Vietnam era. His label, Cash's label, pushed back on its release big time. So it was an album cut. He was booed a time or two when he did it live. And thus, its truth is clear and enduring. Juanita said, yeah, I got shut off again, Bob. We'll talk to you next week. I didn't get around to what I was calling about, but another time. And see, that's the thing about conversations. You don't always get around to what you were calling about, but whatever it is we're talking about winds up being relevant anyway. And I want you to understand, I'm not gooning on how anybody else does a radio show. God knows there's a lot more people that listen to that 6 to 9 program than listen to this one. But, and I'm not talking about the work that I do. I'm talking about you. I would rather hear what the folks who call the horn have to say than Marcos Melitzis any day of the week. Any day. Because it's ever so much more real. As I drove to Kentucky on Tuesday, I was listening to the newfangled satellite radio, and that noon to three slot is, of course, occupied by Big Eddie. And I listened to him have a conversation with Leo Girard of the Steelworkers. And Leo is a fiery speaker and a profound speaker, and he had a lot of good information. But by the same token, I come back to it. I would rather hear from somebody who is a member of the Steelworkers, who is a working member of the Steelworkers, and knows what reality is like on the ground, knows what it's like to struggle, you know, to work every week to keep the lights on and to keep food on the table. That guy, that man or that woman has 1,000 times more relevance to me. By the way, in regard to that vein, John wrote in, and he said, Bob, please, the horn is so far superior to anything on for-profit radio, from the callers to the topics to, of course, the host. Oh, shucks, I'm blushing.
He is.
Malloy and Sam and Rick Smith are great, but here, is where it's at. And John, what you say and what Sandra said are the stuff that make it worthwhile to, and the things that you say in, all of you say in your emails are what makes it worthwhile to get behind the microphone. We talk about fundraising, and by the way, let's see, one, two, with just 30 minutes to go in the program, we are only $40 away from meeting Darlene's challenge. So 40 more bucks, and we're there. And I'm not trying to tell tales on anybody or anything, but John, who so often initiates a challenge, responded to Darlene's by way of thank you for her doing the same. With regard to the sports talk, not everybody hates it. Marty says, yep, for the first time since Brady fumbled against Oakland, I'm cheering for Tom Brady. And he notes, yeah, I was correct. New England over Carolina, Super Bowl 38. And that was where that was with the wardrobe malfunction at halftime. How could I forget? Fritz in Arkansas, by the way, noting, I happened to be watching one of the local channels on my idiot box this morning, and there was a VNR news story out of Denver where a microbrewery was hustling a craft brew called, wait for it, Sandra, sit down. John, find a soft place to land. David, same for you.
Have a heart attack.
T-Brew. T-E-B-R-E-W. T-Brew. Complete with the logo of him bowing and T-bowing. He's... Fritz includes screen caps of the same. Oh, my God. Of course, Timmy wouldn't drink that. Oh, Isaac wants to know, what's the name of the radio host that Sandra and Juanita mentioned? Sam Cedar, S-E-D-E-R. Sam is amazing. Breaking news from New York Times. This doesn't have anything to do with any dark-skinned people avoiding anything. Senate reaches tentative deal to extend payroll tax cut by 2 months. The agreement will also speed construction of an oil pipeline from Canada to the Gulf Coast, a provision necessary to win over Republicans who oppose the tax break. There's really no point in me screaming, isn't there? Is there? Because you already are. Oh! John with a shot into the net on the short side. T-Brew. I'll bet it really sucks until the last three sips. Oh! And then with regard to, then with regard to little Timmy out there helping perform circumcisions on Filipino babies as part of his mission work. You know, Horn Intern Junior Grade Ferg doesn't sit back here a lot anymore, but there's a reason. We don't have a glass booth for him to sit in and giggle. Oh, just great. This from David in Tennessee. Sandusky is only teaching hygiene, and Timmy's just a Protestant moil? What the? Okay, Ferg's out in the yard now. And yeah, thanks, Randall. Sam Cedar can be found at majority.fm. Yeah, and by the way, Sandra mentioned our buddy Andy. And Andy wrote in, he says, what a compliment, an edge. You betcha, Big John Corzine, my governor. From Sandra, an edge. I take that as a profound compliment, says Andy. I'm in awe. Also, Mr. John Corzine, my ex-baloney privatizer corporate de jure governor, is Mr. Obama's biggest campaign bundler, and Gary Gensler, the head of the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, used to work for Big John, so is it any wonder why he was permitted to make a $6.3 billion bet on sovereign distressed European, Italy, Spain, Greece, Portugal, and Ireland debt? Margin call, when the bet went sour, collapsed in price, so used customer funds to cover the call. Where's the money? Well, they used it to cover the bet in Europe, where they permit the commingling of customer and proprietary in-house funds. I didn't know that. Where was the CFTC? Well, they were looking the other way as a quid pro quo back to Big John for his campaign contributions and support for Mr. Obama. Wowzer. Wow. So it's about 25 minutes before the hour. We're going to take a little break. And we'll come back. Got a little treat this evening. Ferg has his Git fiddle out and wants to maybe noodle around and show off his ever-burgeoning guitar skills. So we'll do that. Before that, though, a little something from the Police. And no, it ain't Christmas music. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. That one, Truth Hits Everybody. That's the Police from some of their earlier work. Truth Hits Everybody. It is about 22 minutes before the hour, and a call rolled in as I was hooking up Ferg to the mixing board. Let's go and let's check in with John. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
Oh, it's fun.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. Listen, I definitely don't want to step on Ferg's toes here, but
You're not.
Quick. Oh, good. Just a quick update on this issue that's going on in northeastern PA and Dimmock with the hydrofracking and the families whose water's been completely contaminated by the gas drilling industry.
Yeah.
The issue here.
And it's interesting you would bring that up because I actually had your email here, and I'm glad we are.
Oh, good. Because I sort of mentioned last week about how these 11 families in a place called Dimmock had complained that their water was contaminated, and they had this agreement with Cabot Gas Drilling Cabot was going to supply them with water for a certain amount of time, and then a judge 2 weeks ago ruled that well, the gas company can get out of this commitment that they had to the people. And what's happened since then is the last appeal has failed, and so these folks are without water. And the thing about it is that the agreement was, you know, the gas driller would put in these mitigation systems, and this would fix everything. You know, the water would be fine. It would take care of all the nasty stuff the hydrofracking was putting into their wells and all. But these 11 families who are not on city water, but well water, who's been contaminated, have said, look, this mitigation system isn't going to take care of the problem. You know, okay, it'll get the methane out, but there's all these other 800 chemicals or whatever it is that's in.
Yeah, at least 799 of which are completely carcinogenic, right?
Exactly, benzene and crap like that, right. So these filtration systems don't take care of that. And the judges, you know, the judges said, well, that's just too bad. And, you know, put these mitigation systems in and we'll, you know, it'll be just fine. And they don't want to do it, obviously, because if they do it, then they're accepting the settlement. And anything that goes wrong in the future, you know, they're on the hook for, as opposed to the people who actually, you know, screwed up their water in the first place, right? So, yeah, it's a huge mess. And this really puts paid, I think, to the idea that, you know, hydrofracking is totally safe. It doesn't mess with the groundwater. Everyone's fine from it, et cetera, which you hear still.
What blows my mind a little bit, though, John, is, you know, you were kind enough to share this story with us, and it had some coverage because you sent me a blog post with it.
Yeah.
But why isn't this story, and why isn't this story all over the national media? I mean, even the big enviro groups, why aren't they howling about this? Why isn't this being pointed to as the poster child for why the fracking industry cannot be trusted? Because it seems to be proof positive of that fact, right?
Well, that's a great question. I'm kind of scratching my head, too. The only thing I can think is, you know, oh, it's 11 people, and it's in this tiny little corner of Pennsylvania. You know, I mean, it's basically flyover country. I mean, you know, whatever. It's Appalachia, right?
Well, that it is.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm an Appalachian. I didn't really realize that until, you know, listening to the horn, which is another great thing I have to thank you guys for. But, yeah, it really does. And it settles, in my mind, that issue right there, which is why it's so great that, you know, here in New York, we've got this moratorium on it, and they're, you know, extending the deadline and extending, et cetera. But I think that really, you know, this kind of thing needs to be out there because we are in a position here, at least in my state, to stop this before it starts, which is the best way to do it. And I really think that people need to sort of hear about this sort of thing. So I'm really glad for this sort of this forum to bring it out and the work you do on it.
And if I understand correctly, the mayor went down to PA ready to do this heroic thing and back basically got sent packing?
Yeah, my city's mayor, you know, my city, we've offered to, you know, ship water to these folks down in Dimmock at our expense, you know. And so he went down there last week and there was a public meeting and, yeah, he was absolutely shouted down, you know, we don't need your water, our water is just fine, you know, that sort of thing, which you hear so often. I mean, it sounded exactly like you described, you know, these meetings with the coal thugs. I mean, it sounded like the exact same sort of thing, the fracking thugs, you know.
and that's because it is. I mean, there's a kinship to it because well, it's like this business in McDowell County. There's a whole bunch, you know, there's all kinds of people, political people, corporate people, you know, we're gonna make a difference in McDowell County. Well, that's making it, like I said before, John, that's making a difference in a barn that's on fire. The way you make a difference in the barn that's on fire is to put the damn fire out.
Yeah.
Not, because everything else is rearranging horse blankets on the Titanic.
Well, and that's a really good metaphor because That's the conversation here. It's like, oh, well, you know, there's all these economic benefits that we'll get from, you know, gas exploration, et cetera, and, you know, where I am will be, you know, ground zero if this ever happens in New York. But it's so short term and it's so temporary. I mean, all the workers in PA are shipped up from Texas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look here. Our hospitality and tourism industry, all of our hotels are booked up. And does anybody, John, say, well, yeah, that's because none of the local people are getting jobs out of this?
Well, of course not. But that's absolutely true. You want to talk about sustainable industries here in Binghamton, know, we had a thing in the paper a couple of days ago about how there are four breweries and brew pubs opening up in the city within the next year. They're all planned and scheduled, and they've bought the buildings and everything. And that's, you know, it's a small thing, but that's sustainable investment and economy.
Absolutely.
They're they're repurposing, you know, used buildings. They're going to be employing people. They're going to be creating a real product that, you know, one or two of them may survive the first year, which is just how it works, but they'll be here for the long haul. And that's sustainable.
And there's that's another classic case of what the extractive industries, John, do to sustainable industries. Because those brew pubs and breweries have a real shot at producing something valid, something real, something sustainable, something long-term. And they only need one thing from the local community. And it's the one thing that the extractive industries will take away. They need water. Clean, pure, unadulterated water.
Yeah.
And if the frackers get their hands on New York, well, yeah, good night. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? It's, and so it's astonishing. So, but, you know, there's a movement against it. But, you know, again, it's the same... You know, it's the same battle in many ways that the mountaintop removal activists are up against. They have a multi-million-dollar PR machine, and all we have is our truth and our willingness to lay our lives on the line.
Yeah.
And it becomes an eternal question as to which has the greater moral and political force in this country. The moral force is obviously on our side. But man, that money's got some trump card power that you and I cannot even begin to describe, I think.
Well, there's money there, but there's dedication to people. And, you know, there's that quote from Margaret Mead, and I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like, you know, never doubt that a small group of dedicated people can change the world because nothing else ever has. You know, and you got to believe that, and I do, and this is, you know, what you're doing, is a part of that. And that's why I think it's so great. But listen, sir, you were on fire tonight. It was a great show, and I know you get a big finish plan, so I want to sort of get out of your way and let you do that.
Well, John, thanks so much for calling in, and thanks for all you do to encourage people to kind of keep the lights on here. I really, really appreciate it, and so does everybody who listens.
Absolutely. Well, I'm happy to do it, and I'm going to keep doing it. So, all right, take care, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, take care, John.
All right, thanks.
Bye now. That's our buddy John from New York. As becomes clear. And hey, just a note here with about 13 minutes to go in the program. Thanks to another kind contribution, we are only $15. $15. We are only $15 away from meeting Darlene's challenge this evening, thereby doubling $100 in contributions to $200 and getting us within about $150 of being at the halfway point for December. Wow, that's inspiring. Thank you very, very much. And so this is a little bit of engineering on the fly. If John Fox was listening, he would probably be sending me notes as we go. But there's only so what I did during the little police song interlude is I plugged Ferg's acoustic guitar into the mixing board. And we'll just have to bear with us, okay? We'll just have to engineer this on the fly, and get John's notes later, okay? Ferg. Yeah, just give me an E. Hold on. Let me take my mic down. And see, that's what happens when you engineer on the fly. So instead, we're just going to mic the guitar. Pardon the noises. Oh, by the way, Jack, that Tebow giggle sound, that's the subject of the email. When you were speaking about, Jack says, when you were speaking about Tebow and played those laugh giggle sounds, my cat, who was right by me, turned around at me and looked at me with really big eyes. She hardly ever responds to sounds over the media. Well, I think that's kind of cool. And it's even cooler when I tell you this little secret. That was not a laugh track. Those were not giggle sounds. Those were real live giggles from a real live 15-year-old. That was Ferg losing it. So maybe because it was real and it was human, and because Ferg has this sort of occasion when it's really, when something's really silly, it kind of has this high-pitched Monty Python quality to the laugh. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why your cat picked up on it. So
squealish girl sounds.
Yeah, squealing little girl sounds. Yeah. Now let's not confuse Jack's cat anymore. So you make that thing, make the mouth be quiet,
hello,
and make the guitar make noise. Stand by while I move the mic.
All right.
It needs no explanation.
This is just for the horn audience.
Okay, a little holiday something or another.
Yes.
Nicely done, son. Very nicely done.
I'm sorry it was suckish.
No, it was not suckish. Now stop that.
I was
no, but it's a holiday tune that just doesn't have any holiday words to it yet.
It will never have words.
Okay.
You're supposed to envision what you want to see.
Yeah, make the song be the song that you would have in your mind. Right, exactly.
I don't like lyrics. They ruin a song.
All right, Mozart. Good night.
Good night.
Yes, yeah. The budding musician. Thanks for your patience and listening and everything. That means a lot to him. So it's about 7 minutes before the hour. Not a lot of time for getting into any particular stories. Because, well, you know, I can't say my name in 7 minutes, right? But I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. I'm not an egomaniac, but being away from the microphone for 3 days is more than a little, it's frustrating for me, because to whatever degree y'all miss this show, trust me, please, when I tell you in all truth, I miss you more. This is something really, really special. And thank you. And by the way, just to let you know, thank you very much. We have met and exceeded. And it's because of all of you we have met and exceeded Darlene's challenge for this evening. It's wonderful. and we are actually ever more close to being halfway through December's fundraise. It means a lot. It really does. More than I can actually say. No, so the weekend is upon us, and next week will be a much more normalish week. I look forward to it more and Monday coming at us like a train in the distance. Hope you'll be here Monday evening. Thanks go out, of course, as always, to everybody who makes this entirely volunteer-based effort go. Thanks go out to Lottie, our head moderator in the chat room, and Sparky, our chat room moderator. To our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. To our blogger, Texas Betsy. To Reverbo, our op-ed columnist, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. To my head writer, David in Tennessee. To John Fox, who is our chief engineer, our webmaster, our producer. And by the way, all of you get a big woohoo from Darlene. She's tickled. Thanks, of course, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I keep promising, and I will make it happen, because we need to have one program where just the entire history of the White Rose Society is laid out so you can know the work that has gone into it over the years and what Ben Birch has been through and done to make this all happen. Without White Rose, there are no horn streams. It's that profound. So thank you, Ben. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there. Go to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. There's a button there that says donate. You can use that. There's a button there that says, or a box to fill out there that says, join our email list. That's a way of becoming a part of the solution to Appalachia's anguish. Just get on the email list. And you can buy the coolest t-shirt in the world there. Everybody that ever sees one of these wants one. It's the Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt. That's all there at crmw.net. You know, last night I got home way late, and part of that was because on the way home I stopped in Princeton, West Virginia, where Coal River Mountain Watch was screening The Last Mountain for some folks. Just trying every day to make sure more people know about the vile things that the profit-driven coal industry is willing to do to ordinary human beings just to make another buck. Because they haven't figured out yet, whether it's Kevin Crutchfield or Don Blankenship or any other of the coal thugs, they haven't figured out yet that they don't put hearses, they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. Juanita, I will show your email to Ferg immediately after the program. CRMW.net, the hardest working, bravest people I know. Have a great weekend, everyone. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.